Good morning.
Yesterday we dealt with the different government departments. Today we have inputs more from civil society. The process, for those that don't know how we work in this committee, we give you no more than 10 minutes. Maybe 5 minutes if you're talking nonsense. I only give you 5 minutes. I am the sole judge, executioner of that. But definitely it won't be more than 10 minutes. And then we try and gauge you for another few minutes, about 20 minutes around questions and so on. Your documents have been circulated to all members, so if members were diligent, they would have read them. If not, at least they've got them for their archives and their memoirs. We have at least 7 foot, seven today. CSIR, EnviroServe, why has this order changed? Alright, this program has changed. Well, let's go on the format. Alright, CSIR. Who's the CSIR? There we are. All bright and sparky little researchers. You all look very intelligent. You look like university students. What are you going to tell us for 10 minutes?
That I look young enough to look like
a
university student.
Chair,
honorable members.
That, you know, you don't go through the... I'm not interested in visions and missions and things like that. You don't have to thank my parents for bringing me into life. Go to the areas that are problematic, or that you think are problematic, okay?
First of all, my name is Dr. Linda Godfrey, and I'm presenting the review of the National Waste Management Strategy that was conducted by the CSIR. If I can get the laptop to work. Just as introduction, I'd like to just recognize the National Waste Management Strategy has been approved by Cabinet in 2011. This is our understanding going into the review of the document. We also acknowledge that there was an extensive public participation process that was run during the development of the strategy of which the CSIR was part. Essentially, my presentation today essentially focuses on some of the key issues that consistently came up in the organizational review of the National Waste Management Strategy. You have the detailed document that the CSIR produced, so I'm not going to go through it in terms of some of the minor issues, some of perhaps the inconsistencies that are in the document or to the level of spelling errors and things like that. These are some of the key issues which came out. Seems to be a very slow response on this issue.
Obviously, the issues can't be so key, they take a long to come up.
This is slow, so I'm going to have to wait between slides. I think, first of all, we acknowledge that the National Waste Management Strategy touches on what have been somewhat contentious issues, the policy silence issues over the past 10 years in the waste sector. And we certainly welcome the National Waste Management Strategy addressing these issues. I think some of them, for example, are the regionalization of landfill sites or waste facilities, the issue of landfill pickers or reclaimers on landfills, issues around thermal waste treatment, and there was some discussion around this in yesterday's session. First of all, our point is that the intention of the National Waste Management Strategy is really to provide a step-by-step guide on how to achieve the goals of the Waste Act. And in our review of the strategy, we felt that the strategy is not perhaps written at a very practical level that would assist, for example, municipalities in achieving the objectives of the Act. Also, it doesn't provide short, medium, and long-term objectives or timeframes for implementation. For example, some of the development of standards which are mentioned, there are no specific time frames attached to those. The National Waste Management Strategy has a 5-year horizon, review cycle horizon. I'm going on to the next slide, although it hasn't appeared on the screen. The National Waste Management Strategy has a 5-year horizon for review, but we feel that there should be objectives beyond this 5-year cycle, essentially so that it can provide for the required infrastructure, particularly large capital investments that is required for waste.
We agree with that one very strongly.
And also to ensure that there's government commitment beyond the terms of office of government officials. So our suggestion around that is the development of more detailed action plans, more so than what we have in Appendix 1 of the National Waste Management Strategy. Similar to the types of action plans that were developed for the 1999 National Waste Management Strategy, where there was a detailed action plan for each of the main areas, and we suggest that detailed action plans be developed for each of the goals of the National Waste Management Strategy.
All right. I like that as well.
The key issues which I'm going to touch on, the first one is around measuring and monitoring of the targets that are in the strategy. The second one is briefly around the waste pricing issue and cost, and linked to that is the issue around enforcement and compliance. Our third issue is around the awareness campaigns and behavioural change mechanisms, and then lastly the role of the private sector and public-private partnerships. Right, first of all, for each of the goals, the National Waste Management Strategy puts forward quantitative targets. And we have listed a few points here around those targets. First of all, many of these targets we feel will be difficult to measure in the absence of formal monitoring programs. For example, yesterday we heard the figure of 10 billion rand, the value of South Africa's waste sector. But essentially this is a guesstimate at best. We have no formal monitoring of the waste sector's contribution into the economy. It's not a regular monitoring item of Stats SA, for example. Similarly, we don't have detail in terms of the number of jobs that are created in the waste sector, or we feel it would be difficult to monitor the establishment of waste SMMEs. Also, for some of the targets, we feel that in the absence of a comprehensive baseline, it will be difficult to monitor progress towards achieving the objective. For example, 25% of recyclables diverted from landfill sites. Is this 25% of what is currently being produced? 25% of what is currently going to landfill? It's a little unclear in terms of what we want to achieve there. Also, some of the targets simply require a yes-no, which we feel is insufficient. For example, Goal 4, which states that 80% of municipalities should run awareness campaigns. The fact that they run an awareness campaign, is that sufficient, or should we be looking at the impact and the effectiveness of that awareness campaign? And then finally, some of the targets are somewhat counterintuitive. For example, the last one, which talks about a 50% increase in enforcement actions. And in effect, if we were doing our jobs correctly, we would hope that we would actually see a decline in the enforcement that's required in the waste sector. The next issue is around...
I quite like that word counterintuitive. I just don't know what it means. But okay.
Goes against all logic. Waste pricing cost. There's a statement that's made in the National Waste Management Strategy that we've had poor implementation of the waste hierarchy because there's been a lack of policy to support it, which we disagree with. The waste hierarchy first appeared back in the white paper on integrated pollution and waste management in the late 90s. Our sense is that we support government's move towards correct pricing of waste to address the low cost of landfilling. We believe that currently landfilling is too cheap in South Africa. There isn't cost recovery when it comes to waste management. And the result of this is that any viable alternative, such as reuse and recycling, is difficult to establish and to sustain in the country until we get the pricing issue right. Also, municipalities have a lot of difficulty in terms of investing in equipment and infrastructure, and if we can get the pricing issue right, it will assist there in terms of improving the levels of waste management at a municipal level. This obviously goes hand in hand with the compliance issue. And
what pricing are you talking about?
The pricing of waste services. Going hand in hand with the compliance and enforcement issue, it's of our opinion that if we implement what we currently have in terms of the minimum requirements for landfilling to waste, and we enforce that, it will require the owners and operators of landfill sites to improve the design and the operation of their waste facilities. This will require investment in those facilities, and that will automatically drive up the unit price of airspace of landfill sites. So compliance and enforcement is an important issue that goes hand in hand with the cost of waste management. But having said that, I think we need to give careful thought on who along the value chain bears what portion of the cost of this resulting increase in waste. And I think also we need to think about how we pass this increasing cost of waste onto the consumer, if we do, in the proposed short time frame that's given in the National Waste Management Strategy of 3 to 4 years. I think given some of the other increasing cost issues that consumers are faced with around electricity and food and petrol prices, etc. Once we get the pricing issue right,
2 minutes left.
We also need to move towards some of the longer term issues of including the environmental and social costs. Awareness campaigns that the National Waste Management Strategy touches on is essentially a behavioural change mechanism, and we support this completely, but we need to recognise that awareness campaigns need to be ongoing, they need to be consistent, and we need to monitor their impact in terms of behavioural change. Economic instruments, which the strategy touches on as well, is also a behavioural change instrument, and we need to look at this instrument's role. And then finally, in terms of key issues, the role of the private sector. This is an issue that was touched on yesterday as well in implementing the waste hierarchy. We don't believe that it's the municipality's responsibility to implement all of these things. We feel that it's the municipality's role to create an enabling environment for things like reuse and recycling to happen, and then to allow for opportunities of enterprise creation and job creation within the municipalities. Public-private partnerships and outsourcing of waste operations, the research that the CSR has been involved in over the past few years certainly shows that utilising the private sector leads to reduced costs to the municipality. It gives the municipalities better access to infrastructure and to specialist skills, and it certainly has shown evidence of improving the levels of waste management and compliance within the municipality. There's certainly a role for SMMEs, but I think that we need to have an honest debate around the outsourcing issue, around the role of the private sector in waste management at a municipal level. So in conclusion, I think that in the document there are still some open-ended statements in the strategy that would benefit from goal-specific action plans that are practical, that identify short, medium, and long-term objectives beyond the 5 years. There are a few minor errors and inconsistencies that I think these can be easily addressed in the document. And I think the final point is that from the CSR side, we feel that both the Act and the strategy are a welcome move, and that we feel that both of these documents will move South Africa into a very positive space in terms of improved waste management for the country.
My assertion from the beginning was correct. Very good input. I find it very interesting, but it's got a lot of clout. I'm sure most of the members are going to agree with what's said. Any questions, any input? The department has a whole lot of structures and committees and so on. Do you serve on any of these? Not you, but the CSIR?
The CSR is regularly invited by the department to serve on its committees and to serve in the public participation process, and we do actively engage in that process.
No, not the public participation. You clearly have a lot of skills in this area. On the structures that actually deal with the things, are you part of those structures?
We are in that. The department has established, it's called the National Waste Advisory Committee Office. You correct me on that one. And the CSR was invited to sit on that, and I represent the CSR on that committee.
No, you made your chance yesterday. You're not talking today. It's a civil society. I'm not sure they can talk for themselves. In any case, the point I want to make is this, that I want to see the CSIR in all these structures. They must be involved in all this. There's a research capacity you've got there. I don't want to see them on that they are not on these structures. Any of these structures you have, they must be on it. Any other issues to raise? I'm going to keep your input as one of the inputs I'm going to follow up on. I think the things that you say, and this is when the department should be listening, The issue that you're raising about the action plans, I think, is absolutely excellent. That's what we should be doing. The second thing we should be doing is the issue you've raised about beyond the 5, which we raised yesterday, beyond the 5 years. The problem is, if you want to let people invest in major infrastructure and things to be part of this process, then they mustn't know what's going on beyond the 5 years. I mean, you can't say, well, in 5 years' time we'll review and then we'll decide what we're going to do. That is not a good recipe for investment in this area. The whole issue of empowerment, of creating an empowering environment for the private sector is absolutely pivotal, Ms. Kobena. I have raised this yesterday as well. And then all the other points you make, I think, are well worth looking at. The thing that does worry me, and maybe has something, I mean, if we have no databases around these things, I mean, where do we start?
It's a very time-consuming process to actually get a lot of the data that we need. The department does run the National Waste Information System. At this stage, my understanding is that it's still voluntary reporting, but there are regulations in place that will enforce reporting. The National Waste Information System will collect information, though, on tonnages and who the role players are in the sector. It won't, and Ovid is the expert on that, so I would impugn him to reply. But my understanding is that it wouldn't, for example, collect information on jobs or SMEs or the value of the sector. I think that that's probably a discussion that we need to have with StatsSA to include it within their mandate. They do, for example, collect data on the value and the contribution of the water sector in South Africa to the GDP. But I think that there's a lot of business information for the waste sector that we could still be collecting. And particularly, I think the emphasis on the green economy going forward and the role that waste plays within the green economy to job creation, I think there's a lot of data we could be collecting there.
That document we asked with the gaps in the legal framework, I want you to, as part of that report, also report on this waste information system. What areas are we dealing with and what areas are not we not dealing with? And what are our plans in that regard? Okay? Still no one? Yeah. Okay, lovely. Thank you very much. Very useful. If all of it could be like this. We live in absolute hope. All right, the second input I see has changed now, EnviroServe. This must be the gentleman. Here he comes. Right. Morning, sir. You know the drill.
Yes, I do. Thank you. I'll hopefully be able to give you back some change from the 10 minutes you'll hopefully allow me. It's EnviroServe commenting on the National Waste Management Strategy. We basically have 4 points which we'd like to raise. 2 on the definition, 1 which apparently has been resolved after yesterday where Obed was presenting on the definition of waste. 1 on what we see is maybe a bit of confusion, maybe a bit of misinterpretation on guidelines which are available right now. And then a question on the compliance of the strategy with its own wording. If I can have my next slide, thanks very much.
Yeah, on this definition thing, hopefully we have an act before us at the moment, the NEMLA. And it's there that we may, even although these amendments are not in the Act, we as a committee may drag some of those into the Act.
Okay.
So I agree with you. There are actually a few, not just the AM, there's another issue I saw yesterday which I had problems with in the definition. But those things, I agree with you, they must be changed immediately.
I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this one because you'll see my last bullet point is question mark now resolved. So I'm going to move on to the next one, which is a similar definition of byproduct material, and again, the whole intention is obviously not to complicate the Act, but to just simplify industry's input into certainly assisting and making sure that the waste hierarchy is followed as best we can. So if I go to my next slide.
Now, that is important. So, I mean, there isn't a definition at the moment a byproduct.
It is.
And what is it? You have a problem with it?
Well, you'll see right now the definition according to the Act is fairly long and laborious. A byproduct means a substance that is produced as part of a process that is primarily intended to produce another substance or product, and it has the characteristics of an equivalent virgin product or material. The problem that we see often in our own industry is there's no comparison. To find an equivalent virgin product or material is very often impossible, which then makes it very difficult to get something defined as a byproduct. Should you not be able to find such an equivalent virgin product or material, this material then automatically becomes a waste, which is problematic because that kicks in a whole set of different legislation you're now dealing with waste, and particularly if it's hazardous waste, it triggers an EIA, it triggers a whole lot of other things that you have to do when you come to using this material, which could potentially have been a byproduct going into a different process. So as a simplification, we're proposing that byproduct should mean something like a substance that is produced as part of a process that is primarily intended to produce another substance or product. We believe in the KISS principle.
I hope you don't vote for that part.
No.
Seems to be a lot of loonies, but okay.
Okay. Then, reading through the National Waste Management Strategy, it said that disposal guidelines will also be developed for thermal waste treatment, and I've highlighted the actual page and bullet points just to speed up people's access to the information. But it's always been our understanding that these have already been developed as the national policy on the thermal treatment of general and hazardous waste, so we question why that statement is then made. And again, under the Section 21 of the Act, the emission standards of hazardous waste as well as general waste incineration have already been published. So clarity would certainly help because then we know what we're working with. And then lastly, and this is one where we're questioning, let's call it the compliance of the wording in the National Waste Management Strategy with processes which are currently ongoing, which is not only the contaminated soil guidelines, but also the impending waste regulations. The first paragraph of page 4174 says the development of complex technical standards that must be scientifically exact will use the standard setting procedure of the South African Technical Infrastructure, or the SABS, and will also known as the SABS. And I've just put in a quick snapshot of the framework for the management of contaminated land. Some of the analyses that we're required to do as an industry, you'll see that we're talking here milligrams per kilogram. You'll often, when you read through these documents, hear that they'll talk about using accredited laboratories. They'll talk about certainly using highly sophisticated instruments, which we say is definitely these are technical standards we're developing. And neither of these two processes to date have made use of the SABS as a standard setting organization. So there seems to be a bit of a mismatch between what the National Waste Management Strategy is saying and what's being done. We as an industry would certainly support bringing in the SABS because once the standard is set, it's so easy to understand, so easy to follow, and should there be a change later, much easier to change a standard through the SABS than to change a regulation or to change an act. So again, clarity from our side is key. It just makes our life so much easier. It makes the industry's life so much easier, and certainly then we as an organization can assist in achieving the aims of the Act. So these are the highlights which we have. We believe, you know, our plea is basically for clarity, for, you know, give us the information we need and we can certainly do what needs to be done. Thank you.
That's very useful input once again. I do think maybe two inputs have now been given to us. And yesterday you told us you've done a guideline on explaining the definition. It may be worthwhile that we look at drafting a guide or a manual for the whole strategy. A more simplified, practical guide, as was suggested in the first input. It seems to me that'll be a worthwhile endeavor. So put that on the list of tasks as well, okay? Anyone from the committee has questions? Clear, very clear. You're all happy with the idea of them simplifying the whole strategy to a much more practical guide that explains these things much more clearly, particularly for municipalities and so on? Okay, that's on your list. Thank you very much. Excellent. We'll use this, and as I've said, when we are dealing with that legislation, which will be in the third term, we'll also look at the possibilities of fixing up these obvious smaller mistakes that exist at the moment.
Thank you. That would be much appreciated.
All right, going very quick. Yeah, this is a sector that knows their work. They just motor through it. Right. Legal Resources Center. Okay.
Good morning, Honourable Chair. My name is Angela Andrews from the Legal Resources Centre. A submission was made by us on behalf of the Federation for Sustainable Environment, and I apologise for a mistake. In fact, the Federation was going to make the submission itself, but we didn't inform, made a slip-up where our name was put. So Marietta Lieferink is going to do the presentation with your consent, Honourable Chair.
All right.
And if she needs any legal clarification, then I hope to be able to do that.
All right, 10 minutes. Morning, ma'am. Over to you.
Sorry, I just asked the assistants to move the slides.
Oh, yes.
Not to move.
Good help. This is a parliament. We don't have sophisticated technology, I'm afraid. We're still just beyond the ox wagon. They left here for the interior. We're just beyond that in Parliament. We're still trying to move. Some of us have just had to buy our own equipment.
This presentation argues that abandoned mining waste, including historical mining waste produced by more than a century by the gold mining industry, and mining waste outside of mine properties, that is mining waste that has migrated outside mine properties into wetlands, into private and public areas, as well as into residential areas, should be classified as priority waste in terms of the National Waste Management Strategy, and this waste should be remediated as a matter of priority and urgency. Not all mining waste is excluded by Section 4, Subsections 1B of the Waste Act. Only waste for reuse or sustainably disposed of waste is excluded. This presentation deals with mining waste apart from these two categories. In substantiation, I can unfortunately not move this slide. In substantiation, I refer to the European Environmental Bureau and the United States Environmental Protection Agency, which stated that mining waste can be classified as the second greatest environmental risk next to global warming. Mining waste has profound changes to the ecology, often irreversible changes to ecosystems. With regards to an overview of the Witwatersrand Grand gold fields, more than 120 years of gold mining by more than 120 mining companies has resulted in 410 square kilometres of mining waste, 270 tailings dams containing both radioactive and toxic mine waste. It has also resulted in 450,000 tons of uranium. Uranium is both chemically toxic and it is radioactive. It has also resulted in 4,000 square kilometres of wasteland or bad land, and it has resulted in 6 billion tons of iron pyrite tailings. These tailings cannot be maintained in a reducing or oxygen-free environment, and as a result, it will generate or produce acid mine drainage for centuries. Acidic mine water then causes the mobilization and the solubilization of these heavy metals into the receiving environment, including the water resources. The next slide. The waste from gold mines constitutes the largest single source of waste and pollution in South Africa, and there is wide acceptance, of course, that acid mine drainage is responsible for the most costly environmental and socio-economic impact. 47% of all mining waste is generated by the gold mining industry. The 270 tailings dams which I refer to are mostly unlined and a significant source of dust pollution. The dust is both radioactive and toxic. It's contaminated and uriniferous dust, as well as water pollution that is on surface and also on groundwater. There are, according to the GDAS document on the reclamation of the mine residue areas, 380 mine residue areas. These are areas, because of the uriniferous nature of the gold ore, is radioactive. In the map, it shows all the areas denoted in red. These are the mine residue areas. It includes, for example, the tailings disposal facilities, waste rock dumps, water storage facilities, tailings spillages, footprints left after the remining of tailings storage facilities, and also construction material. The next slide shows that pollution relating to the Witwatersrand goldfield poses a significant risk or hazard to communities. The major primary pathway by which contamination can occur is the airborne pathway. This is both the inhalation and the ingestion of uriniferous dust, as well as radon and radon gas. There is also the water pathway, which is the contamination of surface and groundwater, since many communities make use of, for example, streams and rivers, or externally irradiated with after unauthorized entry to a mine site. Most of the tailings dams are unfenced and there are no warning signs in place. Or living adjacent or on top of radioactive tailings, there are both formal as well as informal settlements on these radioactive tailings. This is an airborne radiometric image which shows all the warm colours, shows elevation in radioactivity. Even a road that has been constructed with waste from mine tailings shows elevation in radioactivity. On the upper left-hand side is the decant area in the West Rand, also showing elevation in radioactivity. The next slide is copied and borrowed with hyper-scrupulous attention from the Department of Mineral Resources at the Graaff Regional Mine Closure Strategies for the West Rand. It shows that most of the densely populated areas within the West Rand falls within high risk of radioactivity contamination. This is the areas in warm colour, show the tailings dams. However, where the arrows point are the wetlands. Since the radioactive tailings migrate into the wetlands, these radioactive tailings or heavy metals are not permanently absorbed and therefore can be mobilized and solubilized by plausible environmental conditions like acid rain, acid mine drainage, as well as the drying out of the sediment and the sudden influx of water, as well as turbulence caused by cattle drinking the water. It is for that reason that a peer-reviewed academic report by Professor Frank Binder found that 800 kilograms annually enters the Boskop Dam, the main reservoir for drinking water of Potchefstroom annually. The next slide, it shows a map, the previous slide shows the uranium concentration in the wetlands of the entire Witwatersrand goldfield. Any number above one represents a health risk and an environmental risk. These numbers are in excess of 10. This is airborne pollution. During heavy wind events or dry winter months, we find there is significant dust fallout. The dust is not benign. It contains both radioactive and toxic heavy metals. The small particles of dust are inhaled, and if it is less than 10 microns, it enters into the alveoli of the lung, where it crosses over the membranes into the bloodstream, where it exerts a radiotoxic impact for up to 40 years. The bigger particles are ingested, that is especially by children with a lot of hand-to-mouth activity, and because the digestive system is more aggressive than the pulmonary system, it breaks down these uranium particles. It is then stored in the bone and the bone marrow, where it exerts a transgenerational or genetic impact from 100 to 500 years. that the next slide is an example of this. This is copied from the Water Research Commission 1214 of 2006. Next slide, please. We find many inappropriate developments. IL-15 is a tailings dam, and there are informal settlements and formal settlements. RDP houses built adjacent to the tailings dam within a 500-meter buffer zone. These communities, because they have home gardens, are exposed to a number of radiological and toxic pathways. When there is runoff, stormwater runoff, the heavy metals bioaccumulate in the wetlands, crops are planted in the wetlands, and that is again bioaccumulates in the crops. It is a very common practice amongst the communities to also use the mud to eat. It is a practice is called pica or geophagia, so it exposes especially the vulnerable children and pregnant women to high levels of toxic and radioactive heavy metals. The next slide shows Studio Sharp, the most published informal settlements which have been built on uraniferous tailings, where communities are directly exposed to radon and radon gas. However, this is not the next slide. This is not the only settlement. This is mirrored in the entire Witwatersrand goldfield. More than 1.6 million residents are living either on or adjacent to uraniferous tailings. Next slide. To limit the risk due to external gamma radiation, the Chamber of Mines has a rule of thumb that there should be no residential development within a 500-meter buffer zone of a tailings dam. However, this regulation is seldomly adhered to. The next slide. This shows that construction material, bricks, for example, are being manufactured from uraniferous tailings. As a result of the use of uraniferous tailings for construction material, it has found, that is the Department of Mineral Resources, that large areas within the central business district of Johannesburg shows elevation in radioactivity because of the use of construction material from tailings, and also as a result of the plumes of radioactivity migrating into wetlands. Next slide. Okay. We find that there are significant lack of management regarding tailing spillages. These are on public places, not on mined land. These remain unregulated and unenforced. We also find that radioactive pollution control dams, this is a desiccated dam, contains elevated levels of radioactivity. The Water Research Commission report 1095 has found that this desiccated dam contains radioactivity levels of 100,000 becquerels per kilogram. The regulatory limit is 500 becquerels per kilogram. There are communities living on the banks of this dam. It's unfenced and there are no warning signs in place, and people collect scrap metal. This is a footprint of a remine tailings dam, again unfenced, no warning signs in place, and it has become attractive nuisances for children to play and even for livestock grazing. The next slide. This is the last few slides, which we can go through rapidly, but it shows that acid mine drainage currently is being neutralized. The heavy metals with neutralization then precipitate or drops out. These heavy metals are then discharged into unlined pits with holings because of a historic mine working. So this pit is in fact what is proposed for the treatment of acid mine drainage within the West Rand, and that will also result in waste that will remain basically unregulated. So our conclusion, therefore, is that the Department of Water Affairs and Environmental Affairs should identify and develop plans for safe disposal of these wastes and or remediation in conjunction with other relevant departments. In this, we call on the Department of Environmental Affairs and Water Affairs to take the lead and to spearhead this program. Thank you.
Thank you. Obviously, very a favor of this area. We, in fact, dealt with it, I think, last week, as mine drainage and stuff. The issue you raised, you said that, you know, our problem is that someone wisely or unwisely previously thought of excluding mining waste from the clause of the Department of Environment, gave it to the Department of like the story of Red Riding Hood. When the wolf comes, you just give the wolf easy access to the house. So they gave it to the Department of Mining to deal with. Now, you said that there's a distinction. Not all mining waste is included in that definition. What is not included? So what falls under environment?
First of all, what is included in the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Development Act is obviously mining waste that will be used in re-mining or reclamation, and also it states the mine residue stockpiles are those that are sustainably disposed of. And perhaps Angela can respond to the Waste Act.
Yeah, I'm really interested to know what is not. Therefore, what is the responsibility of our department?
Chair, if I can address that. We are guided in this by the Waste Act, which has got an exclusion under Section 41B. And that says that waste governed by under the Mineral Petroleum Resources Act doesn't fall under the Waste Act. And if you look at the definition, and it refers to residue stockpiles. Now, those are specifically defined. They're defined as waste that's been disposed of or that is being stored for reuse. Anything that isn't being stored for reuse and has migrated is therefore not excluded. So just by looking at the definitions, you can see what's in and what's out. And I think most of this presentation has been about abandoned, migrating waste, not waste that has been stored and is going to be reused. There is a problem with mining companies saying they are going to reuse their mine dumps and thereby immunizing themselves from regulation. But we're not talking about wastes that are genuinely going to be reused and are being stored for that purpose. Those are the only wastes that are excluded from the Waste Act.
We agree with that. The department. I've always been brought under the impression that mining waste is completely excluded.
Chair, I think we're trying to check the definition of the residue stockpiles and from the MPRDA. Those are excluded from the ambit of the Waste Act. What happens is if a mining area, for example, wants to establish a waste disposal, that they still do apply to us to get an environmental authorization for that activity because it's listed as a waste activity. But the exclusions are specifically for the mining residues and stockpiles. And wanted to quickly check the definition, because I think that, for example, the tailings dam falls within the definition of either the deposits or the stockpiles. So that would make them to be excluded as well. The issues as well that there is with regards to remediation. If it's in a mining area, that again is covered by the MPRDA. The remediation, I think it's called the rehabilitation after mining, is covered by MPRDA. It will not be in the ambit of the Waste Act.
I'm asking these questions because I, as interesting as I find your input, and when we deal with asset mine drainage again, we'll definitely hear your views. But I'm trying to work out what you're asking us as far as the waste management strategy is concerned. I mean, what are you asking us to look at? Because if it seems that the vast majority of mining things are excluded, then clearly this is not the area to deal with in the strategy. It may be definitely in where we're dealing with acid mine drainage, there will definitely be dealt with. And there's a lot of things that you've raised here that I really want to take up with the department now, particularly fencing and things like that. But try to identify me more clearly before we ask questions. What is it exactly that you say of the mining stuff is related to this strategy?
If I may just mention, the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Development Act does require of a mine to have an environmental management program report which becomes legally binding. But it is argued that is only applicable for the mine site, in other words, where the mine is operating. If there are any spillages or migration of radioactive and toxic waste, That is not regulated under the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Development Act. Also, the National Nuclear Regulators Act also regulate, for example, radioactivity and radioactive waste. But they only regulate it when it is on mine property. In other words, they issue a certificate of registration. That certificate of registration is only applicable to the specific mine and the mine site. So whatever residue, whether it's toxic or radioactive, is outside these areas. That is not regulated. At the moment, it falls outside the mandate of all these organs of state. The other issue also is that we now have residential developments being placed adjacent or on top of some of these abandoned or residue areas, and no one regulates it. It is of the opinion, both the National Nuclear Regulator and the Department of Mineral Resources, that it is not within their mandate. So my plea is, someone must regulate it. And if it is not the Department of Environmental Affairs or Water and Environmental Affairs, that at least there must be cooperative agreements entered into, and that your department may make it a priority issue, priority waste, must classify as priority waste.
I don't know if you read in the newspaper a while ago, these matters are being dealt with between the two departments at the moment. They're looking at all the issues of waste, they're looking at all the issues of, which this committee doesn't agree with, that all environmental issues dealing with mining falls under mining. We don't agree with that. We think it should be under the Department of Environment. Those issues now are all being discussed again. In fact, yesterday we were told that the waste issues are also being discussed. So hopefully some results will come out of that. We hear what you're saying. But let's stick to this waste strategy. Any issues you want to be raised with the input? Mr. Morgan?
Thanks very much. Thank you for the presentation. I guess, I mean, I'm actually more interested in the department talking more, Chairperson, about this. I mean, I think the department needs to respond very much to those areas outside of the mining sites. I mean, in my mind, I've got a vivid picture, perhaps there are some grey areas, where rather regarding geography, in the sense of the mine has a physical site, and that is governed by the MPRDA. And then you could also conceptualize another part, which is the type of waste. And, I mean, the issue is, how does the type of waste relate to the geography, the physical space on which that waste is located? Because, I mean, I think somewhere around that is where there is the problem. Now, I accept that you guys are talking to the Department of Mining, and you're well aware of the history of this portfolio committee and the NEMA Amendment Act and the MPRDA Amendment Act. I mean, as the chairperson said, this committee and previous formulations of this committee have always wanted mining authorizations to fall under this department. So, to what extent are you working on this issue? And I mean, I would, Chairperson, I mean, if you don't mind, I would like actually the department to give us a response on some sort of whether actually what falls outside of mine should be a priority waste. It's very important, I think, for us to engage with it because, you seem reluctant to actually do that. So I'm very much interested in that happening. The question I'd like to ask Ms. Liffrink is what I don't agree with mining having its own environmental processes, and I haven't ever. I mean, you can conceive of a situation where it would arguably be done very well, I mean, hypothetically. So what exactly is the response of the mining department to these issues? Because we've said, it should be when you want a certain type of waste prioritized under the Waste Act. But what, in fact, is, in a very practical sense, the response of the Department of Mining to issues of mining waste. Because, you know, arguably it could be good. And what I get from your presentation in undercurrent of it is that it's not satisfactory. Some of the solutions definitely relate to how the Department of Mining works, and perhaps their department that needs to come before this committee as well. So I would appreciate some comments on that. And just for once more for my clarity, you said something about the areas where no one wants to claim responsibility. If you can just restate that, so I can get that 100%.
Before different response, can I just clarify what is, according to the statute, is in within the Waste Act and what isn't? And I just refer you to the definition of a residue stockpile, which is what determines what falls within or without the Waste Act. And it has to be waste from mining which is stored or accumulated for potential reuse. So there has to be some... So in other words, waste has to be stored or accumulated for potential reuse with a positive act by the mining company which says we're going to use this again, we want to use it. Now, that is excluded from the Waste Act, but everything else is included, and that's what we're focusing on. So it's not about who should or shouldn't do what, it's what the Act says. The Waste Act covers everything outside of those stockpiles.
But you see, a lot of the issues being raised on this livery, it's not really the waste. For example, that land is now being used to go build on. So that's not the waste issue, that's the fact of people going to build on a place which is unsafe. The fencing around these ponds. So the input is definitely going into a whole lot of other areas of competency than actually defining what the waste should really be. As I've said previously, that may be worthwhile a discussion and may be worthwhile looking at who's responsible for that. But that doesn't fit, seems to me, under the strategy. I mean, that's the problem I have with our discussion at the moment. I imagine if you speak to the Department of Mining and you speak to this department, forget what the definition is. I imagine they say that everything that is on mining land falls under the department, as Mr. Morgan has just said. That's probably what happens in practice. But let me hear, what is our take on this? Or the, not when I say our, I mean the department's take.
Thank you, Chase. Valid response, Chair, to some of the issues that have been raised by Honourable Morgan, in particular the question he raised about what types of waste. I'd like to just read the entire definition of residue stockpiles. I know to interest that Ms. Andrews doesn't refer to the whole definition here. So in terms of this definition, MPRDA definition, residue stockpiles means any debris, discard, tailings, slimes, screening, slurry, waste rock, foundry sand, beneficiation plant waste, ash, or any other product derived from or incidental to a mining operation, and which is stockpiled, stored, or accumulated for potential reuse. Okay, potential is quite operative in that definition. Or which is disposed of by the holder of the mining right, mining permit, or production right. Now, as far as we are concerned in the department, that definition covers the types of waste that Marriott was referring to. The other issue, Chair, is that Marriott...
So what did you say that all mining waste is
they are
not
all
under this
in everything that is stored in mines has a potential reuse. And that's what they will argue. So as far as we're concerned, all of these things they're talking about, they are covered in this definition. And that constrains this change. Secondly, she's talking about radio.
So your strategy doesn't deal at all with mining because
the strategy is strategy that is in response to the Waste Act, and the Waste Act specifically excludes residue stockpiles. It also, Chair, excludes radioactive waste. So this Act does not apply to radioactive waste because it's regulated by the Hazardous Substances Act. Thank you, Chair.
That's all we need to know. That's the view, and that's how it's always been dealt with. So we've got that. Mr. Morgan, follow.
Thank you for that definition. The problem I have with that is still the geography of that. It waste moves. I mean, it moves. They're different. It moves through the air, it moves through the water. So, I mean, it might just be the case that we have a very serious drafting problem. And what I would like to get out of the discussion is perhaps some kind of movement in the sense that maybe this is an area that can be fixed. Because, I mean, I can conceive of a situation where waste starts on the physical property of a mine and moves through whatever way out of the mine and lands somewhere else. Now, you and I, and I'm in the middle of making an assumption, you said the potential reuse, did you say reuse? I mean, yeah, I get it. It's a catch-all. But what we're now saying is that there are cases where the waste of the mine has migrated and that it still has potential reuse, as if the owner is going to go and claim it back and say, I'm going to rework it, when there's no practical use of it anywhere. And then, I mean, I don't even know how that relates to property rights, Jacob. I mean, the sense of it's moved.
I think your definition is the problem.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying.
The definition doesn't say where it has to be.
Yeah, and that's what I'm really saying.
They keep it on another piece of land.
So, it's not even active. In the sense of the mine owner hasn't chosen it or moved it himself or herself. It's moved. I mean, I see a problem here. And in this sense, I'm sympathetic to what Ms. Liffrink is saying. I don't think it helps for us to just say, well, the definition doesn't help us, you know. We can't deal with it. I mean, I guess in some sense you have to work with regard to the law, but I think that maybe the better response is to say we have a problem here. Can we find out how we're going to regulate it and solve it? It doesn't help to just put up a wall and say it's no one's business or it's not our business. And that is really what I'm saying. I get the definitional problem, but I think we have to accept there's a problem and work out how, if at all, we can solve the problem.
Hopefully the discussions they're going to have will deal with all those issues.
Okay, thank you very much. You've started a very interesting debate. Can I ask you please to make sure that Chileka has your details, so if we deal with acid mine drainage issues that we get your expertise into it as well. I really appreciate your passion for this. I think when you present this input, it actually shows the enormous problems that we have. I mean, now I say, thank God I live in the Cape. I definitely don't want to live in Gauteng, anywhere where these things are happening. So you just confirmed again my faith in the Cape, despite the government that is here, Ms. Wenger. Okay. Thank you very much, ma'am. Right, now we have, what's the time, Billy? Are we going to have a tea? Oh, no, it's long before tea. Okay. Can we have the Paper Manufacturers Association of South Africa? What do you call poppy? No, cement is later. You're a permanent feature in this committee almost. Where's the paper? Okay, paper goes right to the back of the queue. If we have time, we'll see them if they don't have the decency to be here in time. All right, so it is cement. Move forward, cement. Welcome, you know the drill.
waste management strategy, I think, falls short in terms of covering cleaner production, so that's rightly or wrongly, I'm not sure. And then, you know, some of the barriers that we face in industry, and I think the involvement of different sectors in terms of greening the economy through waste. Most of the paper deals with recycling issues, which is the community level, job creation, but I think there are opportunities for job creation, green economy, at the cleaner production level. I think basically there's four areas that I want to talk about. The context, you know, the whole regulatory framework we're talking about, the white paper on pollution and waste, the NEPA Act, Waste Act. There's a Polokwane Declaration. There was a 1999 strategy on waste, national waste management strategy. I think we certainly don't want to see a repackage, you know, and see how that evolved into this strategy. Then I think understanding hierarchy of waste. We talk and we champion hierarchy of waste, but do we actually understand the topmost green row that we see in the triangle? And I think that's absent in the entire strategy. And then finally, goals and targets. I think current status, we've discussed some of the goals and targets. I won't go into that in detail. And then there's some barriers, such as the waste definition in terms of unintended consequences, and we have some recommendations. So is this completely explained up? I think if we look at this figure here, basically, if we look at the different goals taken on the board, basically, the three key objectives that were covered, and that is enforcement issues, institutional development and awareness. That's the key drivers in the National Waste Management Strategy. And we can tag the different goals under those different colors. However, the waste avoidance and reduction, which is a topmost part of that triangle, there has been no goal set on that triangle. And the strategy talks about waste avoidance and reduction. There's not a single target for that set. And that's a bit of a problem. I think this is where industry comes in terms of their processes. So if you look at this top column, top row, waste avoidance and reduction, I'm going to call it the green space, the top waste avoidance. If you look at the 99 strategy, they actually address it very nicely by saying, calling it prevention and minimization through cleaner production. And that was correctly so. So this definitely, although the strategy talks about cleaner production in its different areas, it hasn't addressed cleaner production per se. Sorry, this is not moving. Okay. So I think having said the cleaner production and different goals, we need to understand what the strategy should have covered. And in our view, it should have covered cleaner production, extended producer responsibility, and that has been done. For example, it talks about four industrial waste management plans, and that's really not cleaner production, that is extended producer responsibility. It talks of the green economy, the climate change strategy, resource conservation and resource strategy. Very important, the U.S. Waste Act is also referred to as the Resource Conservation and Recovery Act, and that's sustainable development. We shouldn't forget these things. These things are all happening in our arena, and I think the strategy focuses merely quite a bit on just the waste issue. Okay, so just to reflect on cleaner production, there is a cleaner production center which is part of the Department of Trade and Industry. There is a definition that they've given. Interestingly, we have a definition in the Waste Act as well, and the Waste Act definition is actually more open than the cleaner production center. Basically, what cleaner production says is a continuous application of an integrated preventative environmental strategy applied to processes and services to increase eco-efficiency and reduce risk to humans and environment. The Waste Act has actually included processes and products as well. And this is where the definition of byproducts come into play. Because if we change the definition of byproducts, we could have cleaner production taking place. And I'll illustrate this with a case example shortly. Okay, so let's just unpack a bit of the goals. Objective one. And the goal one, promote waste minimization, reuse, recycling, and recovery. If you look at objective one, it says promote waste minimization in the design, composition, and manufacturing of products. What is the key indicator given in the strategy? It says four industrial waste management plans. Now, if you look at the example of the tire plant that was recently under public participation, it talks about collecting old tires and recycling them, or recovering, or whatever it is. That's not an industrial waste management plan, that is not cleaner production, that is an extended producer responsibility outcome. The waste is there, how are we going to deal with the waste? So I think we need to take that. Now, we need to understand the cleanup production concept, because cleanup production happens at the facility. Minimize waste generation. The tires are there already, they haven't minimized. The more we use it, the more we create. So I think that's an example. We, in our cement sector, for example, use magnetite from the vanadium mine. We can use magnetite instead of mining magnetite from the vanadium mine. As it stands, magnetite is classified waste because they need to classify it as a byproduct, but it must have a virgin material. Now you cannot, you know, the virgin material we've heard earlier has a bit of a problem. I think targets are a bit subjective. We look at promote, reuse, recycling, recovery. It says metropolitan municipalities, cities, etc., initiated separation and sorts by 2015. I think it hasn't taken note. We've had clean town competitions, we've had clean school competitions, we've had certain of these things taking place in many of the metro areas. So I think that wasn't taken note of. We need to move beyond what is already happening amongst the major waste generators or municipalities. Okay, so recommendation one would be review the goals and targets in the context of current status quo, and this certainly comes in terms of the green role that I spoke about earlier. Okay, this is a case study of cement. And if you look at this diagram, there's a line in the middle. There's two ways we can produce cement. If you look at the left-hand side, we can mine the raw material, we can mine coal for energy, we can put it through the heat kiln and prepare kiln, and then we add other raw materials also mined, and we have our cement. We can go the green route, and that's on the right of the line. We can use alternate resources, and this is where cleaner production comes in. We will minimize mining by using resources from elsewhere, for example, fly ash from Askim, a power station, magnetite from the vanadium mines, granulated glass furnace slag from the steel industry. We've been endowed, this country has been endowed with mineral wealth, and we are producing a lot of these, what we think we like to call products, or byproducts, or co-products, as they call it in the USA. So I think we can use alternate resources, and we certainly are using it. We can use alternate fuels. Tire is an example, it's coming too soon. You know, if the plant gets going and then we have access to tires. So what are we saying then? We will then use alternate resources plus some of the mining. We minimize mining, we will then produce our cement. What's the effect of this? If you look on the left, resource efficiency, we will reduce mining. We will protect our environment. Climate change, we've already started using alternate resources and we've reduced our CO2 emissions significantly. We're one of the leaders in the world in terms of our trends. In terms of cleaner production, we're using granulated glass slag, we're using fly ash, etc. So we're actually using alternative products. So there's less of those products going into landfill. We are taking it up. Extended producer responsible tires, it won't go to landfills. We can put it in for recovery of energy in our system and minerals that's there. And consequently, we reduce landfills. This is the objective of the waste activity strategy, reducing landfills. So what does it happen? We've actually come up with a sustainable development solution. If you look at the back, on the left-hand side, there's natural resource management, sound environment management. Economy, we've created jobs through alternate resources by generating a cleaner production industry. So now we're looking at green jobs, not at the recycled level, but at an industry level. And I think the key thing is the department needs to engage with stakeholders in private sector in terms of how they can reduce waste. And those targets are missing in the strategy. And then finally, in terms of social issues, we have integrated waste management, which has different behavior. Industry is going to produce less waste because they're going to have byproducts that are used elsewhere, reduce landfill, etc. And all this falls within the scope of sustainable development. So I really believe this is a case study that, you know, where waste management can be looked at integrated way. The NGOs in Europe...
Two more minutes.
All right. The NGOs support the system. If you look at some of the products that we're using, slag, that they go to different sectors. So what are we saying? Sorry, what we need to say is the raw materials, we need access, there's a challenge of the deposition. Here's some of the minerals we can buy as co-products. On the right hand side, what are the equivalent natural resources we are substituting? So what we're saying, remove the legislative barrier in terms of revising the Waste Act definition. Let's take the international approach. There's a definition, EU definition, which has been tested in all the courts in Europe. Green on, good public participation, byproduct definition. There's an additional definition of prevention and recovery. The USA has included a definition of co-product. Australia has used a definition of ready and intended use, so we don't come up with this potential use like we've heard in the mining now. This we can show ready and communities use. So I think our definition can be informed by the international system. Here there's a table I've included which got the different criteria, and it's met. We actually meet the international standards, and we should not be called waste. We're actually calling them waste at the moment. So we said we recommend that the waste-related definitions be amended, just propose additional definitions and general methods for regulation. And I won't go through it. I think I've given the different ones. Basically what we're saying, in addition to the definition under 69.1, we also would like to have an extra item in the Waste Act. The minister may make regulations regarding a waste protocol that confirms an end of waste status for materials, objects, or substances that have a beneficial use. And this will drive the green economy. And if we do these amendments, we're actually having an harmonization of the international community. If you go onto the internet, you can buy any of these products as products or byproducts in Europe, USA, or Australia. Why are we calling it waste? Here's some of the unforeseen consequences.
What is it that we call waste that you don't want to call waste?
No, it's the definition.
The cement.
No, I think I've given another example.
No, but just get to me. I mean, you say here that you're having problems with the
cement.
All the things you may be saying is right. I'm trying to have the technical input you're giving, so it's difficult to follow.
Good.
I'm trying to see where you're driving at.
Right.
I only hear you saying change definitions. What, to change definitions, what is it? Is it, you say, waste, cement is defined as waste.
Yes.
And you don't want it to be defined as waste.
Yes, nowhere in the world is cement classified as waste. It's a product. Firstly, the reason waste is, has this absurd waste connotation is because a waste ceases to be a waste if it goes through either recycling or recovery. Now, when we add those additives in that I spoke about from other industries as byproducts, those are waste at the moment. The department deems those as waste and not byproducts because of the definition of virgin material attached to it, which means the pocket of cement has got waste in it. The pocket did not undergo recycling or reuse, so therefore they
can't... You've got the cement as waste. Can't be.
Sorry, we don't. Cement is a product. Yeah. That's okay. Yeah. I'm just trying to get clarity so we know what we're discussing. So you think it falls under the definition, they don't think it falls under the definition.
Yes, we've had...
But you want the definition anyway clarified.
That's right. But we have had engagement with the department at DDG level. We've asked for clarity, what does this entail? Recovery, use, or recycle, we've had no response to that. But be that as it may, if it's a waste, that the house that we talk about is a waste, the dam we build is a waste, there's a beneficiation strategy that the government is pushing.
But if they don't think it's a waste, that's why it's not in the strategy, because they don't think it's a waste.
Well, the problem
so
is...
you're not affected.
If we're buying granulated glass flag, we got to get a waste license.
Yes, so, well, of course, because that's a waste.
No, but
cement's not a waste.
No, but if we put that
if
in...
If you put a lot of waste together, you say you use waste to get it into cement. But cement's not a waste. It's the other stuff that you put into it that's a waste.
That's correct, isn't it?
No, it's not. In terms of the definition, if I have a cup of pure water and I put in contaminated water, that entire water is contaminated and form waste.
Yeah, but they don't think so. They don't think cement is waste. They don't think because you put waste and waste and waste and waste and something else together, it's waste.
Well,
they think it's cement.
One of the recommendations...
And it's not waste.
Perhaps they need to revise the interpretation, that because we've asked for interpretation.
Have they ever put obligations on you, the cement industry, because you were waste and put obligations? Have they ever done that?
Well,
then you've got a problem. If they haven't done that, then you haven't got a problem.
We've got obligations. For example, if you want to buy the magnetite from Vanadium Mines, they want a waste license. We now have a waste license with that waste.
Now, you're saying that stuff you're buying from the mine isn't waste? So you just want it easy. You want all these waste that you're using shouldn't be waste because you're using it.
No, what we're saying, it should be a byproduct because there's an imminent use. It's not potential use in the future. It's going to be used right now immediately.
Okay.
It's a byproduct.
Anyone have any questions? To me, it seems to be a problem that's not a problem. The department don't regard cement as waste. Clearly what the cement industry wants is a lot of obstacles they regard that are put in their place now where they are using waste to make cement to be taken away. Mr. Morgan.
I just want to understand something about the process.
cement not waste, and something that goes into the creation of cement is currently being regarded as waste. Is that what you're saying? Yes. Okay, but okay. It's not only cement. If you look at construction, for example, they want to build roads, say for example in a municipality. Roads has also got granulated slag in it as an example. The road construction company will require a waste license to bring in the waste. They mix the waste with whatever other ingredients. Mixing the waste, because the waste license, therefore it's a waste, they mix it with tar and everything else. Mixing doesn't declassify the final product as a waste.
Yeah,
but
sir, they don't regard cement as a waste. So you can't be right.
Can I?
No one thinks that cement's a waste. They don't think so. So even if you put the byproduct in there, and if you think it's going to put clean water and you put a drop of dirty water in there, it's going to now make it all dirty water, they don't think so. They think it's cement, and it's not a waste.
Can I? I mean, I think I get what the gentleman is saying. The reality is that there's a hierarchy of waste.
Yes.
And that something that is going into cement, everyone regards not being waste, the product, cement, is the ingredient, you're saying, cannot possibly be waste because it has another use. Waste is only the end of the hierarchy, that which has no possibility for reuse, recovery, and recycling. I mean, sure, I understand that argument. So, I mean, if it's got a use, it can't be a waste. Something they're putting into cement has a use.
But it falls under the definition.
But that
doesn't matter whether it's got a use or not. It falls under the definition of
waste. It can't be waste.
No, it's only it falls under the definition. You may disagree with the definition, but what they're saying is that the definition at the moment says these things are waste. So maybe if you don't agree with the definition, you can change that definition. But it doesn't wish away the fact that that's what it means. Just as the definition doesn't, according to them, include cement, according to them, these products that you put into the cement fall under the definition of waste. That is why the gentleman wants to change the definition. He wants to take those out of it. That's another debate that can be had.
Can we get the department to respond to that?
It will be, you look at all good suggestions to fix up the definition of waste, and you'll fix it up.
I think, I indicated yesterday, and Honorable Morgan was part of the parliamentary process previously, when we had, for example, Metal Recyclers Association came, and then they said, can you please exclude metal scrap from the definition of waste? Because it has been, it will be used. And we all agree to say no. As soon as the generator of a certain product has no further use of that, we consider that as waste, and that's how that we have defined waste. The fact that it has, we agree, lots of waste streams have use, that we agree with, but we still define it as waste. We
and say it
may have
value.
It may have value. There is a point when it ceases to be waste. As soon as it has gone under through the processes that we have indicated, then we don't consider it as waste. That's why we don't consider cement as waste.
So when we have that discussion on the definition, I think we look at what we'll do for you, sir. We've heard you. The whole premise on which you're here is not, doesn't exist. So the thing that we will look at is the other issues. So what I ask you to do is send us all those definitions. You spoke about an EU definition and an American definition. Send all that stuff, so when we look at the definition, we'll take all that into consideration. You may even, well, it won't be in the bill, so you won't comment on it. But we'll find a way of doing it. Send me all that information, okay? We've heard you, and we'll deal with it. Okay. Cementius Association, always an interesting input. All right.
ESCOM. ESCOM here? In the area of polluting, you are serial polluters. Don't worry, I'm going to go easy on you. I spent some time with your CEO a while back, so... While we're waiting, I do suggest that, Ms. Kobina, that you pull together all these proposed amendments. Take all of them out of the submissions and comment on them. Say, well, we agree with this, we don't agree with that. In that way, we'll start building up a discussion and a consensus to what amendments should be there. Okay? Okay. So just do that as well for us. That'll help us when we get to the legislation to see if we can sneak it in somehow. Sneak it in to the legislation that's presently before us but doesn't deal with this topic.
Thank you, Chair. We ESCOM, we see ourselves as providers of energy that grows the economy. We did not have any definition of the greatest polluters, but we take that under consideration.
Not what you see yourself as. What the rest of us can see you as.
Point taken.
If I have to think of what people think of me, I think I'm wonderful. But most people don't think of me.
Let's not go there. Chair, what...
No,
we're not going there. Thank you for allowing us to come. What as ESCOM, we would like to put a contribution. We are on the front end coming from actually using the coal. We burn and then we get ash. And from that ash... that ash is then used by other industries, and there's also potential use as other countries use that waste for roads and other things. And we would like to suggest that any of the legislation and regulations and strategies that are put in place should be done in such a way that they assist us. Or they assist the industry in making sure that we have optimal use of that product. So I will hand over to Deirdre, and I've got some supporting teams that will help us if need be. Thank you.
Thank you, Lee. I'm Deirdre Hurst. I'm the Environmental Manager at ESCOM. And really, our issue is not dissimilar to what Diraj presented a few minutes ago, but perhaps I can just present a slightly different angle to it.
You won't need to do this, you don't even have to go there, but make your point.
Just to give you a little bit of background in terms of ash, a lot of ESCOM's ash goes into many very different important projects and some examples of the projects where our ash has been utilized is as far afield as Dubai, but also in the Khasi Dam, Khartrain, and Soccer City. Sorry, this computer doesn't. I think maybe just to give an introduction, ash previously was specifically excluded as a waste. So our ash disposal facilities that we operate and the utilization of ash was never constrained in terms of the way that we reused and recycled ash. To give you a little bit of background, we produce 36 million tons of ash a year, but we currently only reutilize 2 million tons of ash. And we have available on an annual basis at least 11 million tons for reuse and recovery. The utilization of ash in South Africa is a lot lower than that in other countries, and we see that globally most countries use more than 60% of the ash, and we're hoping that through various processes we are able to increase that usage. Maybe just to give a perspective of our process, the boiler, and you can see where it says dust collectors, that's where the ash is removed. Now some of the ash goes to the disposal site, and we acknowledge that that ash is certainly classified as waste and will be managed as such. But there is a certain amount of our ash that is immediately removed from the dust collectors, or we call them hoppers, and taken to be reused. And in some cases, there's no treatment to the ash. It immediately goes and gets loaded into trucks onto a train, and then goes to cement companies that then reuse it into their cement. So there's no process that the ash undergoes except from being separated and taken off. Just to give a little bit of background in terms of internationally, we use most of our ash in the cement industry, but there are other uses for ash that are used internationally, and a significant amount of ash is used for road and filling. And we want to ensure that the definition and the waste strategy are worded in such a way that we are able to encourage these other uses of ash. And all the uses of ash that are reflected here are done overseas in terms of specific standards, scientific methodologies. So they make sure that they utilize the ash in a way that doesn't expose the environment to any harmful health impacts or impacts on groundwater, etc. We have a process that we are going through that we would like to encourage the utilization of ash, and we will increase the amount of usage from the current players, big cement industries, but we also want to start encouraging BWO and youth companies in developing new businesses in the ash arena. So those arrows now depict that we want to increase the amount of ash that we utilize. Incidentally, we also have a climate change benefit for every ton of ash that is utilized, there's one ton of CO2 reduced. We obviously want to decrease the amount of ash that goes to landfill or to the ash disposal facility, and we believe that that will support the goals of the National Waste Strategy. We do have some internal constraints, and we're working hard at addressing them, and really they are commercial issues. We're used to buying from suppliers and not, apart from selling electricity in a very regulated market, not necessarily selling a product, so we have to get our commercial processes around for that. But we do have some concern around the waste definition. And I must say the intent of the legislation, the intent of the definition, we agree that the intent is that when you use ash into cement, that the cement then does not become a waste product. But in talking, and from international experience, and talking to some lawyers that operated in the UK and had to represent cement companies, they had actual incidences where bagged cement were taken off the shelves for a length of time and stopped the utilization of ash because the definition did not specifically say when the end of waste was. So the definition was very similar to what our definition in our Act is currently, and there were some changes made to that definition which then enabled the free use of ash in cement and not having the bag of cement that was on the shelf to be sold being classified as a waste and having to be sold in terms of being a waste. So we've given some examples of what's taken place in the European Union and what they have used, where they specifically in the legislation provide, first of all, when a byproduct becomes a waste, they specifically specify that, and then they specify when a product comes to an end of waste. The Australian legislation excludes and exempts ash from being a waste, but we are not proposing that that's the case for South Africa. And then we are proposing that the waste definition and the criteria for end of waste are included in this.
Think of me as a 5-year-old. Try and explain to me simply what the problem is. You say you have 36 million tons of ash. You sell 2 million tons of ash. What is the problem that you can't... What are you saying is the problem that you can't sell the rest? Because that's what I hear from you.
No, that's not the case. The legislation is certainly not preventing us from selling the rest. We do want to go into a process where we increase the utilization of ash, and we don't want the act or the strategy to hamper that in any way. And hence we say
I'm
that,
trying to find out you sell 2 million tons already. There's no problem. There's 36 million tons there. What is prohibiting you from selling the rest, other than not having a market?
So there is a market. Nothing's prohibiting us at this stage from selling the rest. What we are concerned about is that the way the definition is written currently in the Act could constrain us in the future. So we're saying let's.
Why, if you can sell it now and there isn't a problem that you're selling it, what is in the future going to happen to create a problem?
You're
telling me there's nothing stopping you selling the 36. Right?
Yes.
So what in the future can happen that will constrain?
That we have a situation where there is no specification where once the ash is goes into another product, that it ceases to be a waste. So the definition does not specifically describe when the product that cement goes into ceases to be a waste. And we
but
just
they tell you that they don't regard it as waste cement. Your product goes into cement, they don't regard it as. So what is the problem?
No, they have said that, and what we're saying is that we've seen, and that was my view as well, that the intent of the legislation and the response from the authorities is that it's not a waste. But what we've seen is when the legislation was written exactly the same in the UK, that the definition became a problem for people that use the ash in their products, and their products were then not declassified as a waste. So we want to just preempt that from happening.
So we've asked them now to go and draft a simpler guide for us, to take this strategy, to go and put it in simpler words, to, like they've explained the definition, to go and do all that. And obviously in doing a simple guide like that, I imagine they'll say specifically things like cement is not included. I mean, do we need more than that? Are you saying we need more?
I think also when, for example, when we use ash to in road building, we don't want the road to become a waste site. So we want...
That just sounds so illogical. I don't even know why you're saying it. Why would we say a road is waste?
All we want is to make sure that the way that the legislation is written is that it's very clear that once it is utilized in for other means, that it is never classified as waste. So we have no issue with...
So it has never happened?
It has never happened in South Africa.
In any issue you know of?
Not in South Africa, no.
South Africa. Okay.
But it has happened...
But you're worried that sometime in the future some mad hatter...
Yes.
...within the department is going to start classifying roads and ways.
Well,
I
suppose we could also get NGOs raising a concern and putting in petitions to prevent us from using ash in backfilling of roads, etc. So I suppose it would just be anything that could reduce the opportunity for the utilization of ash.
Chair, can I just add, there's a certain way of handling waste. So once you move it, to put it on the road, it's still waste. So the legislation and the strategy must be in such a way that there should be no restriction in actually using that, because it actually helps to reduce our landfill size. But then there is a process
which... You guys are sounding illogical. If I take this, and I take that, and I take this, and I add them together, they don't remain three separate entities, they become something new. So it's only if we start defining the new thing as waste, then there's a problem. If we're not defining the new thing as waste, there's no problem. Just logically. You take this, you take that. They're three separate entities. The only time they remain waste is we keep on defining them separately. But if this ash and this becomes cement, it's not ash anymore. If it becomes a road, it's not a road, it's not ash anymore, it's a road.
Now we
so it's got a new meaning, it's got a new product, it's got a new definition.
We agree. I'm trying to... But the challenge is, that paper now for you to move to the road, that process, if that process is restricted in some way, in such a way that it becomes difficult for you to go and put it in the... so that it becomes the non-waste in the end product. That's the way the issue is.
But you told me that it's not restricted.
No, currently,
a young lady tells
but,
me.
But
currently, but what must... Do you want us to legislate for something that's not current? We must look into the future somehow, look for a problem, and I'm just not understanding the problem. There may be a problem. I'm just stupid. I don't understand it. If you tell me you can sell your 33,000 million tons, billions, I don't know what it is, you can sell it, there's no problem.
Okay.
If those things go into others and it becomes a road, it becomes cement, there isn't a problem. Problem, no problem, then there's no problem.
So the one aspect that is going to change is that under the transitional arrangements of the Act, ash was not a waste in the previous Act. It is now classified as a waste. And under the transitional arrangements, it says that we will need to go through a process of licensing, which we will intend to do. So we still have to go through that process of licensing. And while we're going through that process of licensing, the definition could... get in the way of our UV utilization of ash.
Well, that may be, but...
It may be.
But we're going to be very happy with licensing. I'm very happy. If a waste product wants to be used somewhere else, I think there must be a license for it. It's logical. Maybe a toxic waste substance. We wouldn't want to get it become part of our roads, as the lady explained this morning, which is happening. They're using products now which are toxic, and they're building bricks from it. I would hope that those bricks are taken off the market, because, I mean, you know, I wouldn't like to live in a house like that. So I think if you want to, I mean, once there's a waste and you want to use it again, surely there must be a licensing into a new product. The only time there's a problem is if they start becoming difficult with you, then you just call me. Or if you don't want to call me because you don't trust me, you phone there, there's the DA, there's COPE, there's IFP.
Well,
Chair,
we would have
to... If you don't trust this ANC, maybe I'm in the wrong faction, then there's another ANC.
We would hope that our comments that we submitted now will be taken into account and avoid us having to come back and object.
No. I mean, if there's going to be problems, I mean, I can't forever see that there's going to be problems. I can't see this department or any government department. If you want to build with ash, you want to build a road. If there's something logical and something decent coming out of it, if it's a toxic thing, then clearly, I mean, I also would say that they shouldn't be allowing that.
But any other thing like that, if they were starting to become difficult, which I know they won't, I mean, then you can, as I said, if you don't trust me, there's so many people you can call. In fact, I don't know if they're all going to be elected again by the time you foresee the problem, because you see it far in the future. But there will be. I can't see the DA disappearing. They're going to come smaller, but they won't disappear. And the other, well, the other parties may disappear. They're even smaller. But what I do, what I will do, as I did with cement, I've already asked the department to take all these possible amendments, to look at them and comment on them. And when we look at the amendments, clearly we'll make sure that we deal with these. It may be by that time that we look at this this issue that you've raised, and we may find that it just creates more clarity. But at the moment, the clarity is not needed because there's no problem. So the serial polluters. Anything else on the serial polluters?
And I think just that we are trying to reduce the pollution. So
you should tell me that I should come and look at two of your plants that you're now using renewable energy to produce the to make these coal factories of your rice. Wouldn't that be a good clue for you and a good media strategy for you?
One of the
For you're talking about the one where we got solar panels.
Yes.
Yeah, you're more than well.
I mean, I don't understand who your PR person is, but they seem to be quite useless personally. I don't know why they're getting such a big salary. If it was me, that's the first thing I'd go and be telling everyone. I had to see it at COP17. I went to your stall there and I saw you doing these things. No one ever told us you're doing it. You must, you know.
Oh.
If you're a serial something or the other, must try and do something to stop me.
Now, we've heard you. Let's quickly see if members have got follow-up questions. It seems that no. You can send my good regards to Mr. Damas.
Okay.
Who will do? And we certainly invite you. Thank you. We actually may come to you in July when we do our oversight visits. We may. You don't know it yet. Maybe a surprise visit. So you can't bring out all the nice cups and things. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
I'm going to remove the
If the same as with cement, if there are any further pieces of legislation elsewhere you want to bring to our attention, so feel free to send it to us. Okay? We'll circulate it when we look at the legislative amendment.
We have included in the application.
And I see it here, but I'm saying if there is anything you want to send us, the specific legislation, so please feel free to.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Has paper arrived?
Sorry, paper is here.
Did you know when you should have been here, ma'am?
I understood that I needed to be here by 11 o'clock.
By what?
11 o'clock.
11 o'clock. Yes. What's the time?
5:02.
We were just working too fast.
Fortunately, I'm here.
Come and join us here, ma'am. No, it's... you're then timeless. We were just on a program that's moving much faster than we anticipated. 11 o'clock. Yeah, that's right. We won't adjourn for tea, because this is our last input. So if people want tea outside, Chamber of Mines. Yeah, but I thought they're coming on, are they coming today? Not Friday. No, that's fine, let them come, so I didn't see them. Okay, sorry. I didn't see that. If there is tea outside, if you want to grab it, let's try and finish these two further submissions. Dr. Scotcher?
I'm not Dr. Scotcher. I'm Terry Winstanley. I'm here for the paper making manufacturing association.
You've got 10 minutes, and then we'll ask you some questions.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you. As I said, I'm here for PAMSA, and that's the Paper Manufacturing Association of South Africa. Its members represent more than 90% of the paper manufacturing capacity in South Africa. It grows approximately 600 million trees, so it has a significant mitigation effect for climate change purposes, and it employs 180,000 people, especially in rural areas where unemployment is high. One of the cornerstones of the Waste Act is reduction, reuse, recycling, or recovery of waste, and obviously only as a last resort, its treatment and safe disposal. The manufacture of paper and paper-related products can use biomass-based energy and recycled paper and bagasse as raw materials. And for this reason, PAMSA has a key interest in this process. PAMSA's submission for today is that the implementation of a sustainable national waste management strategy has a significant stumbling block, and that is two of the definitions contained in the Waste Act are highly problematic. And it's on those two issues that I'm asked to address you today. These two are the waste, are the definitions of waste and the definitions of byproduct. Firstly, dealing with waste. The first aspect of that is the second part of the exclusion of that which falls into the definition of a waste.
We agree with that.
Okay.
No,
and?
It must be changed.
Thank you. Secondly, and more importantly, from a waste reduction point of view, the facility which stores the waste that has a commercial value must ordinarily be licensed until that waste has been reused, recycled, or recovered. And so the need to obtain a waste management license in those circumstances creates a disincentive to use that waste. Just one example is a board or a paper manufacturing facility where timber, the raw material of which is chipped or debarked, and the leftover chips or bark can be used in such applications as compost or fuel. Currently, the Department of Environmental Affairs regards that material as a waste and requires a license for its storage. This often creates absurd results and a disincentive to use the material.
Why?
Because you then have to obtain a waste management license in order to store it.
So?
It's a long process.
How much does it cost?
A lot.
How much?
I suppose it very much depends on the particular process, whether it's to be a basic assessment.
How much?
I don't have a number.
Well, you're not going to get much joy then.
Well, could I finish my submission?
Yes, you can.
I have a plan. The other problem is the byproduct, the definition of byproduct, which was apparently included in the Waste Act to overcome some of the difficulties described above. However, the requirement that a byproduct must also have the characteristics of an equivalent virgin product or material has given rise to significant difficulties. That is partly because in many cases there is no equivalent virgin product or material for the particular application in question. And thereby it excludes some materials from being classified as byproducts and automatically categorizes them as waste. Again, this creates a disincentive to use large quantities of waste and significant waste streams for commercial purposes, and that would thereby divert them away from landfill sites. Now, PAMSA recognizes the important role that the DEA plays in preventing pollution, but we think that there can be a solution without foreclosing on the possibility of significantly reducing the waste streams. PAMSA asks that the definitions of waste and byproduct be revisited. It would like proper consultation with government and industry stakeholders, thereby also ensuring the alignment of the Waste Act and the Air Quality Act, which it believes are misaligned in this respect. And it proposes that in the absence of that consultation process, PAMSA suggests the amendment to the exclusion of the definition of waste to read, of any portion of waste being stored for reuse, recycling, and recovery is not waste, provided that it is stored in accordance with the prescribed norms and standards, which, as you know, we are awaiting. It also proposes the amendment of byproduct by the deletion of, and that has the characteristics of an equivalent virgin product or material, and the substitution of, and that is stored in accordance with the prescribed norms and standards, again, those which we are awaiting. Thank you for your time.
Any questions?
Okay. All right. These amendments must also be commented on, please. The proposed amendments, just like the others, okay? They're very similar to the others. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Chamber of Mines. Good morning, Chamber of Mines. Chamber of Mines has become very young. They all used to be white males who were old and doddery. Now you're young and bright and sprightly. Transformation. All right. You know the drill. You have 10 minutes. Please tell us what the issues are.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and the committee, for giving us this opportunity. I think essentially I want to put some few issues in perspective. We are going to explain the specifics of why we are here, but essentially the views that have been expressed by the cement people and the paper and ESCOP, I think apply to us as well in terms of the definition of waste. But I also want to respond to the earlier issues that were raised about the exclusion or non-exclusion of mining waste and the border beyond the fence, no man's land, etc. I just want to reflect on those few issues. But before I do that, I think let me explain so that I'm understood in the proper context. The Chamber of Mines represents 90% of mining production in the Republic. But that representation needs to be qualified. There are over 1,500 mines in the Republic, and only 250 of those mines belong to the Chamber of Mines, and only 56 mining houses. I'm deliberately putting that statistic forward so that people understand that the nature of the problems that we are having in the country in relation to mining has to be understood in the context that you've got no average mine. You've got good performance, and you've got laggards. And if we do not spend a little bit of time in terms of unraveling that differentiation, we are going to apply a one-size-fits-all, which may not be appropriate and which may not be resource-efficient. Having said that, the issue about mining waste is really the relationship problem between the two government or three government departments. And as the chairperson has indicated earlier, that there are processes to deal with the overlapping regulatory requirements and duplication of regulations, and maybe in an effort to find gaps which can be filled, I think would support that process. But I think the overriding principle is that you've got mining companies which should be held accountable for their actions. And it's always proper that if there is mismanagement, collusion, that the mining company be mentioned by name. Because, say, in the industry, it does not bring in accountability. Because certainly, if a particular mining company is polluting, and you are saying the industry is polluting, It's not the Chamber of Mines that is polluting. And the Chesapeake Chamber of Mines is going to be accountable. It's the particular mining company that has got the capability and the ability and the responsibility to be able to respond to its activities. So, all that I'm saying is that in terms of the implementation of the strategy and the development of the strategy itself, it should be able to delineate that there are good performers, there are bad performers, and the strategy should be targeted at those who can perform and reward those who perform well. In terms of the specifics, the issues regarding the definition of waste, I think, have been raised sufficiently, and I don't need to add to that. And in terms of the development of standards for soil quality and remediation of contaminated land, again, the specifics come into the picture here, that you do have those areas that are contaminated but are a part of the production, if I may put it in that context. And that may not be remediated, but it should be remediated if they are offside in terms of the mining legislation. And the other important factor that I want to put in is that there should be a clear distinction of what the current mining companies are responsible for and what historical problems are there and whether you find those people or not, and if you can't find the people, who takes responsibility for those kind of activities. Lastly, I think a fundamental approach should be the realization of application of innovative technologies. I think the cement people explained in detail the various opportunities that exist in terms of cleaner production and going green. I know the issue of acid mine drainage and mine dumps, tailings facilities have been a source of irritation for the people. But I think there are opportunities that we need to turn our thinking around and see if there are opportunities that can be implemented to either reclaim, retreat, or make these dumps in edge. And I think the legislation should actually, and the strategy should actually encourage those kinds of opportunities. Thank you.
Thank you. The, I mean, you made general points, but the Act doesn't, or the strategy doesn't apply to you, does it? What do you regard?
It does apply in the sense that, for instance, let me just give one example in terms of licensing, that it is regarded as a listed activity and therefore also environmental authorizations are required. But it falls within the whole ambit of regulatory overlaps, and that they need to be a coordination between the Department of Mineral Resources and the Department of Environmental Affairs.
What things do you need licenses for?
Pardon?
What do you need licenses for from
this? Well, general waste on site.
So though the Act doesn't apply to you, get licenses from them to keep waste on site. Mining waste.
To mining in as far as the residue deposits and stockpiles are concerned. But when you look at other forms of waste, like your general waste, hazardous waste, and so on, it does apply to mining. And I think it's attributed to the problem of duplication of regulatory requirements, wherein even though a mining company will cover that in terms of its environmental management program, there's a waste component which would be approved by the Department of Mineral Resources. Beyond,
give me an example. I'm trying to work out. Mining and hazardous things are excluded. Or nuclear, radioactive, are excluded. Just try and explain to me what, give me specific examples of what kind of waste is outside of that you aren't licenses for.
The Waste Act also applied to mining in as far as other streams of waste are concerned, like your general waste.
Give me examples.
Tiles. And office paper, general waste, domestic waste that is generated in a mine.
Paper.
So
your rubbish kind of stuff. Things that go.
But I think that is as a result of this.
I'm surprised that the Department of Mining didn't regulate that as well.
They do regulate. It's dual regulation. It's a problem that we find ourselves in. So both environmental affairs and the DMR is regulated.
Well, this committee just feels that DMR shouldn't be involved with this stuff. It's like making the wolf the sheep herder as well. Give you licenses to the mines, and they give you authorizations for all kind of things, which is wrong. It's all in one department. But in any case, that's the view of this committee. The issue you raised are of a general nature. Let's see if there's some questions. General questions? Any general issues?
My voice isn't very good today. The one thing that's come across to me in the main people, the paper, the ISKCOM, and now the chamber, is certainly the question about the licenses. In one instance, the paper lady spoke about the amount of time it took to get these licenses, a lot of paperwork and things like that. And maybe something that we should just look at and just see what the problem is. I'm not saying that we should not have licenses, we must have licenses, because I think people will take lots of strange chances. I'm just saying that it's popping up all the time, so maybe there's some merit to us having to look at, into it.
Well, if there are problems with the licensing process, anyone is welcome to send submissions to this committee. We'll look at them. I mean, if you're finding problems with the process, what you won't find any grace from us is that there shouldn't be licenses. I mean, there should be. But if you're having problems with the processes and so on, and obvious things, then please send it to us and we'll have a look at it. That's what we're here for, to follow up those kind of problems and try and avoid blockages. Mr. Morgan? Mr. Mangania?
Thanks, Chairperson. First, I accept the view that you don't represent everyone in the industry, nor is there an average mine. But to what extent... do you regard the waste, the mine waste that has migrated as falling outside or not of the Mineral Petroleum Resources Development Act? In other words, I'm interested in you actually giving us an answer to the question posed by Lifford from the Chamber of Mines, of whether those category of waste should be actually declared as a priority waste under the National Waste Management Strategy Network, in other words, under DEA, and whether in fact that kind of waste still has potential reuse. If you could talk us through that in relation to the definition that was so kindly read by our friends from the department. Thank you very much.
Ms. Mangania.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable Morgan has covered me on some of the issues. I want to emphasize this issue that they also raised of banning of tire. I think that one, according to me, is the one that is so rifle around the mine. You find everywhere the mine dumping just next to the school, the banning tire. I think it must have some of the regulators, so that even although they are not part and parcel of what we are doing today, they also need to take conscience, because really where I'm staying is just tires everywhere. and then burning during the school hours, I think the mining sector, we need to have those lists. Chamber of Mine is representing so many mines. These are the names of those mines, so that as they said, we mustn't take everybody with the very...
What's the mine's name, ma'am?
Pardon?
What's the mine's name? Name will change.
Yeah, it's Impala Pula Mine.
There you are. Burning tires right next to the school. It's an interesting question. To what extent, if we see pollution like that in a mining area that we don't regulate, to what extent does the department still have jurisdiction in terms of your, what are you, green, blue, pink, what's Corbin's name? Green. But just remember that question. Dr. Huang?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think it's from your briefing, you say your Chamber of Mines only for have the 250 members, because in South Africa total for the 1,500 mines, you only occupy or belong to you is 250. So this 250 is under the 20% for belong to you. You and my mining are chamber. But why is what is the other 80% for mining? What department is your concern for this relationship with the DMR and the DEA? So this is a quite bigger issue for the 80% is the majority, not a part to the your chamber of mining. So I don't know if from the department side of how is the relationship with other majority 80% mining is the mining waste for the national mining. With the management and the participant. I think this one, we must take a more concern. Thank you.
Ma, Zikalara?
As I was listening to my son in front of me, Umzubus, he was saying acid drain, mine drainage, what is community, everybody in fact. And I'm one of those. But now, maybe today, it can be a day whereby one can get just a brief explanation. What does the department see this as a threat to the lives of people? What best can the department do just to try and do something about it?
Well, Ma, you know that the Department of Water really deals with acid mine drainage, and they were here last week. But if they have a comment to make, then they can make it. Not their area of expertise. That's the bottom. Those are the questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I'll start with the questions from the last one and go back to the first one. In terms of the acid mine drainage problem, I think the department may want to respond, or the Department of Water Affairs may want to respond as well. But I think I want to give a perspective from the mining industry so that people understand how this issue is being handled from our side. The first thing people need to understand is that the problem of acid mine drainage has three facets. The first facet is the current mining companies have got to have a water use license. And in that license, they have got water resource management responsibilities. Therefore, any acid mine drainage that runs from their properties is either authorized or illegal. And if it's illegal, the law must take its course. The second point.
Can I just ask something? I haven't thought about this. In what form do you release that water? Is it completely pure or is it gray?
Well, there are conditions that come to the water use license. So that's why I'm saying that
you have to comply with the
we have to comply with the conditions of the license. And if they don't comply with the condition of the license, the law must take its course. And that's a clear-cut situation. I think that doesn't need any debate. Then we've got the second point, the second facet of the nature of the mine drainage problem. And this is where you've got historical and legacy problems intertwined with current mining operations, where there are difficulties in terms of delineating the responsibilities between historical problems and current operations. And that's the subject of debate between the affected parties as to whether they've got good corporate responsible policies, whether they've got superior business practices in terms of putting South Africa first or putting shareholders first, whatever the case may be. But it's the subject of the company and the state in terms of the delineation of the responsibilities between the two overlapping areas. And then the third facet is actually in terms of abandoned and ownerless and derelict sites, where either the state has to undertake efforts to identify the culprits and make them responsible, and in the absence of responsible culprits, the state has to take responsibility for those actions, for remedial measures. And it's as simple as that, no matter how politically unpalatable it may be, but that's how it's done all over the world, that in those instances where the responsible party cannot be found, the responsibility falls on the state. As to whether the organized business community in that sector is able to take up that responsibility is a subject of negotiation. And that's where I come in terms of the Chamber of Mines, that we have identified this as a problem. We have mobilized our current members to make an effort in terms of putting resources on the table and making sure that the state is assisted in dealing with this problem. And it's in that context that we're saying that we are also concerned about acid mine drainage. We will go the extra effort in assisting the state in undertaking these activities, and we are doing so. Now, in terms of
the next question,
in terms of the representativity of the chamber, or otherwise, I think maybe the honorable member did not understand me correctly. I'm saying the chamber represents 250 operations, but those 250 operations represent 90% of production. So you do have almost 1,250 operations that only represent 10% of the production, maybe 90% of the problems. And the next question is just in terms of the banning of tire. I think it falls within the same category of the responsibility of the mining company, that the mining company is supposed to have an environmental management program, and in that environmental management program, it must have a waste management plan, and in that waste management plan, there are obligations and responsibilities of how it's going to manage its waste. And if it's not managing it according to its commitment, and the law must take its course. And I think I'm going to repeat this law must take its course principle over and over again, simply to demonstrate that in most instances, all the problems that have been raised, or maybe the majority of the problems that have been raised, are not the lack of legislative tools, maybe lack of enforcement. And those relationship of lack of enforcement and lack of legislation, I think, should be thoroughly understood, because more and more legislation may not necessarily solve the problems that we are seeing. And I have basically going to go into that one, the next one, where there's the question by Mr. Morgan about waste streams overflowing from mine facilities or tailing facilities. It falls within the same category, that the responsibility of the mine is to manage the tailings facility in such a way that there's no runoff from the site. Any runoff from the site is an illegal activity. And if those illegal activities have been allowed to continue for a longer period, I think it's not a question of lack of law, it's lack of performance.
both from the mining company itself and from the enforcer, from the regulator. So it's not a regulatory gap, it's a performance. Thank you.
You know, on the acid mine drainage, now that I've got you here as a captive audience, I will say this to you. What you're saying in terms of your responsibilities is true, that those that are in operation, there's a law that regulates it, and you must do all those things. But the big problem is, of course, and there's a lot of reasons why all this, where the abandoned mines are, when you look at the input that the lady gave this morning about the terrible things that are happening all over Gauteng. You know, the one thing I haven't heard the Chamber of Mines come forward to say, we don't have necessarily a direct responsibility for the old stuff, but here's our contribution. And I think you will find that South Africans are very forgiving people, maybe too forgiving. And the problem is that there's a huge problem costing a huge amount of money, and the only people that are paying for it is the taxpayer. And every cent we're paying on this mine, and it, we're now talking with the longer term solutions are going to cost billions of rand. And I think a good PR for the Chamber of Mines, until you come forward and start being part of the solution to these problems, which are not necessarily a direct responsibility, I think it will go a long way to changing the image of the way that people view the mine industry and so on. And maybe then we will get to what you're suggesting, that people then look more specifically at the specific culprits and not the industry at all. The problem is a legacy we have. And that legacy is because of problems in government, because of a whole lot of things that the mining industry do, that there wasn't regulation to do that. But I really think that the mining industry, and it came out last week very strongly, when a particular mine company, and I say it again, wants to use tactics to get out of obligations that the law provides when they are being approached to be part of the solutions that we're trying to do for the whole country. And that just creates, for me, I see red. And I think the industry should buck up, and they should look at this issue, and they should look at their image, and they should see how best to interact with this. I don't need a response from you. I'm just, you're my captive audience here, and it will be good if you carry that message back. That I really think that the AMD thing is such a big problem, and it's so worrying to so many people. And I really think that some of the industries that created this problem should come forward and contribute and be part of the solution. Mr. Morgan?
Thank you, Chairperson. I get the point that you make. You're arguing that there is a problem of implementation. It's a common problem in government. But it still doesn't sit easily with my heart. And the reality is, and it's not a comment about your members or whatever, it's a comment about mining in general. Mining has always had a special deal in South Africa from the state. And particularly with regards to ignoring the environmental consequences of mining. You know, we're living with the legacy of over 100 years of mining in the Witwatersrand, right? Because the state, predominantly the apartheid state, didn't care about these things, quite frankly. And there are legacies that exist, and to some extent that special deal for mining exists today. Because we can't regulate the environmental sides of the mining from here. So mining is hugely powerful in the context of South Africa. I mean, you always had a special deal. It's very easy to sit back and say, oh, well, the state must do it all. I get that. I accept it. But part of me also knows that it hasn't happened for 100 years, and it's not happening now. So it is at least you said something very interesting. Well, you know, we should name and shame mine. Yes, and I would hope that you would name and shame mine in your organization as well. One of the problems I have with the Department, Minister of Mineral Resources and environmental issues around mining is that department isn't open about environmental transgressions from mining. They don't provide details. They won't. They say it'll affect the share price of mining companies. I think it should affect the share price of the mining companies. So, I mean, and to the credit of the Department of Water and our minister here, I mean, our minister is very open, actually, about the actions she takes. So I am hugely supportive. That alone is an example of the differing standards between mining and the environment. So it's very easy to say, well, implement. But I think the chair was making this point. There's reputational damage which is being done. As I said, I don't know necessarily who all your members are. But my heart yearns for the 1.7 million people who live on Cape. I'll tell you that, all of that. I mean, tell me. I mean, are some of those members yours? Where it comes from, the sources of that, because I suspect some might be. So, by all means, and the point is there's a special deal for mining because you want a special deal for mining. Your members push government to give you a special deal for mining. So, I'm left feeling uneasy, Chairperson, about the blaseness of those comments. You've created a situation because you're so politically powerful as a sector in South Africa. And then you sit back and say the state doesn't do anything. Well, the state's scared of you. That's why. So, you know, I think you should do more. I think this is major reputational damage for the mining sector. And where there are transgressions, you're right, you should be exposed.
All right, last comment to you. Well, depends what you say, of course. I've always got the last say. But at the moment, you have the last say.
It would depend on what I say. But I think I don't accept what Mr. Morgan is saying, simply because we don't make the rules for ourselves. We are the ham in the sandwich. We don't make the rules. And I have indicated, you know, in no uncertain terms, that if there is no compliance with legislation, the law must take its course. And I don't see any problem in terms of how powerful or how influential it may be. As long as the law says you must do this, if you don't do it, I don't ascribe that to the influence of the industry. I think the issue is whether the industry was influential or not in the past we inherit, the future we design. Those who were there at the time cannot be running away from their responsibilities under the pretext that the current players need to take their responsibilities. I'm simply saying that the history of mining is almost similar to the history of apartheid. The only difference at the moment is that the National Party is not there to point fingers at it. But in terms of connivance with apartheid, the industry did. But from now on, or from the time when the government changed, I think I don't agree that we have disproportionate influence on the state. We are simply recipients of the direct government issues that come our way. We may raise our points, but it does not necessarily mean our points may be taken.
I think maybe you're talking past each other. I think Mr. Morgan is talking more of the legacies. And reputationally, the mining industry is not doing anything now to try and help with the legacy. You may be complying strictly with the law now because it's only come into being in the last while. But it's the same thing I was discussing, the reputational side of things. That if the industry doesn't come forward and deal with some of those as you say, apartheid inequities, then the industry will be seen in a certain light. And I think that's the message that we want to convey and ask you to convey to your members. Because the problem is the dispensation that exists today, where the same people that grant licenses for people to mine are also the ones that then regulate all aspects of mining, clearly a recipe for problems. I mean, we do not, for example, let's look at Eskom. Where's Eskom? They were here earlier. We don't say that because Eskom is also, and from the past, is also one of the big polluters, therefore we now give the Department of Trade and Industry the right to regulate the environmental issues in that industry, or public enterprises for that. I mean, the rest of all other industries fall under this lot, environment.
problem is, that is what Mr. Morgan is talking about, is that power that the industry had has given them a special dispensation. And we are saying, not talking about legality, but we're talking about morality. What morality does the industry feel towards what has happened in the past? You know, the interesting thing, of course, is the mining industry. There may be an abandoned mine today, but the people that own that mine is some other mine industry that is now operating somewhere else, and they've left that there. They've made their billions and they've moved on. I think that is the issue that really needs to be addressed. It's a reputational issue. It's an issue of morality, not legality. I mean, if we try and ever take you guys as an industry to court to try and deal with that, we'll lose. We'll lose because the laws didn't exist at that time to create obligations on the mines. And even if it did, Fani Buddha signed it away in 1987. He signed an agreement with the industry where he took on all the responsibility for the abandoned mines. So the legality is not there. We've got no... Legally, we're not going to be able to deal with you guys. Except if it's an existing mine. And that's really the issue. So, let's leave it there. I know you will convey that message. Now, members, I thought it was a very interesting morning. I've learned a hell of a lot. But now we come back to problems. As you will recall yesterday, two departments felt that they did not have much respect for Parliament, so they just didn't arrive yesterday. Didn't call us, didn't tell us why they're not here. But they've now arrived and they now want to make inputs. We've already decided yesterday that a letter should be written to the two DGs to say that we thank them for all their participation, but unfortunately their representatives didn't arrive. One of them from Water Affairs came and saw me last night to explain. I then explained it to the DG of Water Affairs, and the DG of Water Affairs is taking this matter very seriously and taking the issue up. But we have a human settlement here now. Now it's up to the committee to tell us what we're going to do, whether we're going to hear their inputs or not. Seeing as we do have a little bit of time. Can I have any comments from the committee? As I say, I don't really know what Human Settlement's position is because they didn't come and talk to me. They've done it via Ms. Marabella.
Chair, I think as long as they consider themselves reprimanded, they should present.
Okay. Any other views? All right. Human Settlements, you have 10 minutes, and use a few of those to explain why you weren't here yesterday.
I profusely apologize for arriving late yesterday. As I came through the door, you were adjourned. I had some problems with the flights and then that resulted for me coming late to the meeting. Otherwise, I was released by my teacher.
Were the problems with the flight your problems or the flight's problems? In other words, were you late or was the plane late?
I wasn't.
It's very important.
I wasn't late, but there were some delays at the airport.
Okay. Well, that's fair enough. Then it's fair enough.
It was overbooked and I had a problem. Thank you very much. My presentation will... I'm technologically challenged due to my age, so... Can someone help me, please?
Chileka. Ms. Marabella. Evie. Yeah. Help the...
Oh.
No, help there. She doesn't... No,
copy to the...
No, how to use these computers, you'll have to be very old, because they're so old.
Okay.
They come from another generation.
Okay. I'll just quickly look at the strategy with regards to sanitation. I'm from the Divine Recognition Segment, from the sanitation unit, so whatever I'll be saying will be with regards to sanitation. If you look at the definition of sanitation as the draft white paper on national sanitation policy, version 4.1 of 2012, and looking at the definition of the waste, I think somehow sanitation has been left behind. Or I don't know whether we have to look at page 13 and 14, whereby the strategy is talking about waste. I would love to have seen a little bit of sanitation there, because sanitation is part of waste, and the waste that we cannot run away from. If you look at the next slide, are you also challenged? Okay. If you look at the next slide, the regulation regarding the sludge management, which is what the sanitation is looking at as waste, the regulation, the following acts which are relating to sanitation implementation and provision should be emphasized in the strategy, as they are not properly implemented. You know what? We know what's happening with the municipalities. We know that sanitation is an afterthought. Even if you look at the budget, you'll find that out of the whole budget of the municipalities, only 3% will go towards sanitation. And you know what is happening with sanitation in the country. So these other acts, the Wastewater Act, the National Environmental Act, Management Act Quality of 1939 of 2004, Disposal Act, Water Act 36 of 1998, Environmental Conservation Act of 1998, National Water Act, National Health and Hygiene Strategy, and CARA. All these acts should really feature, or they should be part of the strategy, so as to emphasize the importance of sanitation. Again, looking at the wastewater disposal and fecal sludge management guidelines, which is one, which forms one of the policies and the guidelines and the tools, the strategy needs to point out the authorization of the wastewater disposal. In other words, the disposal site permit as described in the Act. So the guidelines on the sludge management in agricultural practices, in other words, how do we irrigate? How do we use sludge as a means of irrigation? That needs to be regulated, and it is regulated, but it needs to be spelled out in the strategy. And the sludge as a resource, we have seen some the other byproducts of other resources, but sanitation is very, very silent. Whereas there's a lot that you can get out of the management of sludge, for instance, compost, pellets for fuel, the grinds that you normally have over the weekend, those pellets, the brown pellets, are the ones that are very, very important. I mean, are very, very powerful, like more than the white beads. So that one is very important. The bricks, made from sludge are of superior in strength. You won't feel the smell won't be there because it will have been treated. So these are the things that, and these bricks are less, they absorb less moisture. And we know that sludge is used for landfill cover. And if we look at that, we'll be helping the sanitation unit and even the Department of Human Segment to attain the Ethiopian Declaration of which we are all aware of. Sorry. Technical reports. In technical reports, the strategy needs to emphasize and drive how sludge should be managed, because we know that if the wastewater treatment plant capacity is to be increased, what are the measures? What are the what is the provision of the management of life, what are we going to do with those who are not complying or are not adhering to the norms and standards? And also, the negative effect of the poor sludge management to the environment, in other words, the impact of the negative management of sludge to fauna and flora, water sources, and land quality in general. Because we know that the quality of water in any stream channel mirrors the social activities, including sanitation, in a particular drainage basin. So, yesterday, Health was talking about the problems around the health issues and so on that emanates from the social activities around a particular drainage system. So, of which we need to, and of which sanitation plays a very important role. So the following guidelines should also be part of the strategy. I'm not going to go through them. The National Health and Hygiene Strategy, Clean Drop Program, the Groundwater Protocol, and how do we manage the on-site sanitation through Groundwater Protocol. And then again, monitoring and evaluation regarding sanitation. The strategy should include the following mechanisms to monitor the implementation of sanitation systems in terms of their environmental impacts and compliances, the approval of technical reports, even if just to include them, not to dwell on them. Compliance in terms of the groundwater protocol, monitoring the fora that we have or the committees, or the structures that you have in the provinces, how they deal with sanitation issues, and then sanitation project sustainability audit, and another time bomb, the management of full pits. What are we doing with the full pits? So that's part of our waste. And the discharge of effluent to water sources. We recommend that we need to encourage environmental, sustainable sanitation service delivery. Promote integrated development planning, prioritization of sanitation service delivery. We need to address sanitation needs and priorities of people in the strategies because this impacts on the environment in informal settlements, rural and urban areas, and also farm dwellers. And we promote environmental sound sanitation services in conjunction with human settlements. And then planning for sustainable sanitation services. In conclusion, yesterday I heard in the White House, that we were talking about job creation. We need to spell out this job creation that is generated through sanitation service delivery. And then in goals 1, 3, and 4, those goals are very silent about sanitation, but is mentioning other ways. Sources like paper, pesticides, etc., but it's very silent about sanitation. Goal 7 does mention the remediation of contaminated land, which I assume is that groundwater protocol is included. The package of outcome 8, under which the Human Settlements Department subscribes, and output 4, which talks about access to basic services to minimize environmental desolation. Those are the things that we really have to include in the strategy. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Now we're back to my confusion, which I raised yesterday. Where does sanitation fit into all this? You heard you said we were at the big outhouse. Oh, it was White House. I thought you said outhouse. I thought you were in a toilet mode, so you saw the outhouse. Okay. Trying to explain to me, I'm also really confused where sanitation fits into all this, into waste.
Chair, thank you. So, Schedule 4, Part B of the Constitution is very clear as to how we should handle sanitation. Local government matter in terms of Schedule 4, Part B,
and it specifically talks to water and sanitation.
That doesn't help us. I know what the Constitution says, but that doesn't help us.
But the
it doesn't solve the issue. The issue, there's a lot of things in local government that we regulate with modern standards at the national level.
Correct. But the issue is that if we have to do everything that's in that slide in our strategy that is developed in terms of the Waste Act, the question is, what is the Department of Human Settlement going to do? Because they oversee this function of local government. It used to be with water, now it's with them. We cannot in our waste strategy that is published in terms of the Waste Act deal with all these things. Not possible, Chair. This is not our area. What we do is we license wastewater treatment work, and we do it because it's in our act. We can't do...
Don't you deal with the waste things in the Department of Health? Don't you deal with the waste things...
But we do those things because we have a mandate in terms of the waste.
You don't have a mandate. You do it because it's waste is the things that you're doing as a strategy. All your answers you've given are not answers. The fact that in the Constitution the local government function is not an answer. The fact that someone wrongly gave sanitation to Human Settlement is not an answer. Doesn't mean that they have to set the norms and standards for it. We deal with waste at the environmental level.
Chair,
are you telling me those are your answers why it's excluded?
Chair, the Waste Act does not give us a mandate to develop norms and standards for sanitation services.
Why?
It's not in the Waste Act.
It's not one of the four exclusions.
It is not in the Waste Act.
Just listen to me, Ms. Kobena. Listen and then talk. It's not one of the four exclusions. So listen to what I'm saying and then tell me why it's not included.
The section of
listen a bit and then answer. You quick. You want to answer. But just listen first. We're going in circles. You're saying things over and over which are not conducive to any helping this committee. So I want to know, and I want to know... carefully, you explain to me very carefully, what are the reasons that sanitation is excluded from the waste strategy?
Chair, if we look at the section, we mentioned development of norms and standards. Every clause of that section, there's no clause there that talks about sanitation services. We cannot develop norms and standards for sanitation services. It is not in the Waste Act. We can license wastewater treatment works because it is in the list of activities that are to be licensed in terms of the Waste Act.
You're telling me that things that go into the toilet and wash out are not part of the waste definition? Given a broad definition, how do you deal with the act? You give a broad definition, then you exclude four particular areas. The area of sanitation is not particularly excluded. So there must be some other reason why it's not included. I'm trying to find out what that is. You're not telling me. Mr. Beloy. You want to add something?
Any other people want to add something?
Why is it that sanitation does not fall within that broad definition of waste?
Chair, I can attempt to end. Well, I think, first of all, it's unfortunately I participated in the drafting of the or the revision of the policy on sanitation. And the reason sanitation will not be a waste, I mean, is how first of all sanitation is defined. But I think the question obviously is what happens at the end of what is defined as sanitation. For example, if you're talking about the issues of what comes out from the toilet. If that waste is taken to a landfill, for example, I mean, that landfill would have to be complying with what they have to be receiving. So what exactly the link between what we deal with in the Waste Act and the waste strategy? I think that's that there is a definition that has been put up. I mean, the collection, removal, disposal, or treatment of human excreta and domestic wastewater, and the collection, treatment, and disposal of industrial.
The answer can only be one answer. If it's not that, then you must go and find an answer. Your answer can only be that sanitation, excreta, doesn't fall under the definition of waste. That's not your answer. And you don't have an exclusion, sanitation. Then the issue that this Department of Human Settlement is raising, why aren't you dealing with sanitation in your policy on waste, is the same question I was raising yesterday already. Don't look at their definition. That doesn't matter what their definition is. The definition is your definition, waste. And you must tell me why it doesn't fall under that definition. That's the only legal answer, the logical answer there can be. So you must either convince me or tell me you'll go and look at it and then tell me what the answer is.
Chairperson, I think and if we're talking about human excreta, it goes through a wastewater treatment process. Wastewater treatment plant we are currently authorizing. So we do give authorization for wastewater treatment plants to deal with the wastewater, which I assume that the human excreta will go through. So those will be going through a wastewater treatment plant that is authorized by ourselves and the Department of Water Affairs. So I'm not sure if there would be a gap there, because the treatment of human excreta is dealt with through the conditions that will be given to the wastewater treatment plant.
Then they're asking, why aren't we giving further normal standards and things that they've got those available?
And for the treatment, we...
Why don't we fully deal with it?
For the treatment of that, it's dealt with through the conditions that we issue through an environmental authorization. So all the wastewater treatment plants would have to comply with the conditions that we issue through a license. So that those will be their norms and standards. Those are the things that they have to comply with, that we explain through a waste license. And as cases from Water Affairs, they would have explained to protect the water resources through a water use license as well.
I wanted to say this is an S-H-I-T-T-Y conundrum, but I'm not going to say that. All right. Any questions, any contributions, any... Look, this is a serious issue. This issue of sanitation is one of the serious policy issues facing this government. The mere fact, and we're not going to deal with it today, but the fact that the implementation of sanitation is in the human settlement, the laws are in water affairs, I mean, how we transferred our whole area of government to a department that clearly didn't have a unit called sanitation. It didn't have laws to deal with sanitation. So, you know, those decisions were taken elsewhere. They were political decisions taken elsewhere, but the consequences are huge. And I'm very worried that after a long discussion with you, we now have come forth that they're not excluded from the definition, that they are included under treatment plans. But somehow we still don't see that sanitation is part of this thing. I really think this is a huge issue for discussion. Because for me, the obvious thing, and that's why I kept raising it yesterday when I was there, the obvious thing for me is that all the norms and standards and policies and everything should emanate from one source. And that's the waste strategy source. The implementation of that is another thing. Just like the implementation of the municipal things on the municipalities, the health things on the health department. But the strategies, the norms and standards, the laws and all those things, clearly we should be looking at this much more clearly. Now, I'm not going to engage with you more today because we've got to a certain point where we clearly now see that there is more of a role than what clearly you thought of before this meeting started. But we'll have to engage on it more. I want to get much more clarity on this. All right, thank you, ma'am. I appreciate your input. You can be sure that this committee is very worried about the issue of sanitation, the way it's been divided.
We're finding a proper time to actually discuss this thing, and we will then definitely call in all the departments that are necessary. And not on the wayside, but the actual way that sanitation is being dealt with in government at the moment, within two departments, it's just chaotic. As you know, and I know, that 1.2 billion rand that was given for rural sanitation was not spent last year because of these problems. 1.2 billion rand was not spent. Okay, but that's all for another day. Thank you very much. And now, Water Affairs, who's one of our prodigal sons, or whatever. The DG is dealing with the lateness of the coming yesterday. So all we want from you is to deal with your input, please. All right, he didn't only come late, he forgot his memory stick as well, so let's look at the input. Over to you, sir. Go straight to slide 4, and you don't have to thank me or my mother for my birth, you just go straight into slide 4. The main challenge. There we are, let's stop.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson, and honorable members and the health. The Department of Water Affairs has been part of the developmental stage of the strategy, and the inputs were made also during that time. So, in the presentation that I'm going to do, we mainly focus on regulatory issues, issues of cooperatives, authorizations, compliance, monitoring and enforcement, alignment of legislation, and interlinkages with other projects and programs that the department is currently involved in, which links much better with the strategy. Those are the likes of the waste discharge system and other projects that are there to ensure the protection of water resources. We acknowledge that the complexity of a waste stream and failure to manage it properly may lead to pollution and both for groundwater and surface water. That has been our main concern when we looked at the strategy. We also think that there should be some kind of regulations that are developed to unpack further as to how to deal with the issues of outdated infrastructure that might be that does not support the protection of water resources, the lack of compliance in the landfill sites, I mean, by people that are disposing of, would cause more problems to the water. And also issues of illegal dumping that should actually be kept through issues of compliance monitoring and enforcement. And we have also noted that waste treatment options seems to be more expensive than the cost of just disposing. So people take it as a cheaper, more cheaper option to just go and dispose, I mean, without further treating and ensuring that the water resources is protected. We have identified areas of engagement and collaboration. We should develop some kind of memorandum of agreement between us and the sister department as to how to ensure that the water is protected efficiently. And then participating also in reduction of the number of unauthorized landfill sites. DWA has developed some guidelines that talks actually to the strategy relating to treatment of sewage sludge and how to handle it and how to process it further. And those guidelines really are useful and can then be tied up with the National Waste Management Strategy. Currently, what we doing in line with that is that within the NEMA authorizations, Section 49.2, just to take one of the examples then, it says that a decision to grant an application for a waste management license is in respect of waste disposal facilities is subject to concurrence of the Minister of Water Affairs. This section must still be reinforced to see to it that really cooperative authorization takes place. And in section...
What's the difference between this license and the license Mr. Beloy just spoke about?
This license is for water use, and he is talking about the licenses for the actual disposal of waste.
Yeah, but you say in respect of a waste disposal facility.
Yes. This means that if an applicant is applied to dispose in a landfill site, their department will request from us to put conditions in the ROD to say that this applicant must comply with 1, 2, 3 to ensure protection.
So they apply to them and you guys give the conditions?
If we give the conditions because it has pollution implications.
Okay.
And then we would therefore issue a record of decision in that regard, and then they incorporate it in their issuance of the permit. We have been part of technical committees developing the notices, as honourable members can see, and we have been inconsistent. Engagement with the sister department in ensuring that the strategy covers almost all aspects on the protection of both the environment and the water.
All these drafts.
Yes, those are in the developmental stage, so since they are not finalized, we cannot term them, final regulations. But,
we want copies of those as well.
We have in cooperative authorization received some requests for ROD's, and as numbers are reflected there, it's a record of decision for either a waste disposal facility or a contaminated land, and would provide them and then they will incorporate it in their conditions. The
how much is it outstanding?
Outstanding minutes?
Yeah, you tell us how much you've done. Are you up to date with all these issuing of the ROD?
Yes, we are up to date with issuing of RODs. We have got a maximum of 60 days to provide that ROD to the Department of Environmental Affairs.
60 days.
60 days. And we don't have any backlog in this regard. So the ones that we are still handling are still within the 60 days that we must provide the record of decision. And we have got some volumes of guidelines that we have developed on how to handle sludge and the requirement to use it in the agriculture or co-disposal or beneficial use of sludge or best management practices for commercial usages. Finally, what I can say is that the department is also developing the waste discharge charge system that will look at different polluters, wherein incentives will be given and charges will be made depending on the loads and volume of the waste that is discharged, and that is still in a developmental stage. We have also
completed. Am I right to say that all the things you've dealt with here is sewage?
Yes. In this regard, it's sewage, but there are other guidelines as well that talks to other waste stream, like in the mining environment and the likes.
And this equals sanitation?
Yes, there's a sanitation part in it, because when...
Where's excreta sanitation?
Sorry?
Where's excreta? It's sanitation.
Yes, it's very much part of sanitation. And we have put some regulations on the that regard relating to if an applicant would want to utilize wastewater, partially wastewater treated water to irrigate maybe
and like golf courses
and the like. And we have drafted regulations on that regard to say indicate how that should.
No, I ask this because we've had this whole debate whether sanitation is waste or not. Yeah, we've got a whole department that deals with all this stuff and gives licenses and so on, gives the reasons back to the Department of Environment. Okay, information slides, what is this?
The information slides are the barriers for containment in a waste handling facilities that we recommended that could be used to protect leakage into the groundwater, and those inputs we provided to environmental affairs. And we also give them as conditions to those who are applying for water use licenses so that they adhere to. Basically, that is that. Thank you, Chairperson.
These pictures here. Yeah.
Okay. Any questions, any comments? Everyone happy? But it does show us that Suri is very much part of the system. Okay, thank you. As I said, the DJ is going to speak to you further, okay? Thank you very much for staying. Bye. All right, this is an interesting morning. As I said, I think a lot of stuff has emanated, a lot of useful issues have arisen. What were the four areas that you told me you're drafting regulations on? Which were the four industries you're drafting regulations for? Sorry?
Are you talking about industry waste management plans?
Yesterday said there were four industries Minister identified.
So the four industries are, there's the tyre industry, and there is a plan, or a couple of plans that we're looking at in terms of tyre regulations. And we have the paper and packaging industry, we have the pesticides industry, as well as the lighting industry. The point we were making yesterday is that the process of developing those plans is on hold because we need to develop a regulation that is going to cover the development of industry waste management plans, a generic rate. So we don't want to do regulations for each of those waste streams like we did with the tire regulation. We want to do one that's going to cover the development of either plans in general.
I've asked this question because those of you involved in those industries, it's very important that you interact with the department. They're busy drafting regulations and then a plan for those industries. And I do suggest that you get involved there and put your points of view. Watch carefully when these regulations are available to comment on. These things need to move a bit faster. Okay, so that is today. Tomorrow, as I said, I want us not to sit later than 11. Friday. Because people, obviously, some people that have to get to Mpumalanga and so on, very difficult. So we'll try and do it quickly. There's basically three inputs, because the one input is the same person for two. So I think we should finish quite early, so you can make your arrangements accordingly. Any case, I walk out at 11, so you can follow me if you want. Then to say, lastly, there's a whole lot of things that have arisen now. I think we need to, this report you're going to give us in 3 months, this whole issue of creating action plans for each goal, the whole issue of looking beyond the 5 years, those things I wanted some comment on. Then we've asked that you look at all these amendments that have been proposed, particularly to the definitions, and draft a document for there with comments on what people have said. Then I also want to know in 3 months' time how far we are with this simplified practical version of this strategy. The other thing, you know, once we've got a practical version of this, if we want to make this accessible to people, and we're talking here about ordinary people that not necessarily all the technical skills and so on. I don't often see from this department documents in the different vernaculars. I don't know why a person who wants to deal with waste in Paddy shouldn't be able to do so. So I think when you do these guides, you must also look at the possibilities of us doing some of these practical guides for people in the other vernaculars. We've already discussed the issue of municipalities. That you're coming with a report for us. And what was the second thing I said yesterday? Oh, the framework. And what we're going to create, what we're adding to the framework, of course, is this whole issue of sanitation. It's very clear that DDG, very, very clear to me, that you guys are going to have to sit and relook the issue of sanitation.
because it's very part of waste. This is the part of water, almost exclusively deals with sewage. And it is very clear that when we're fighting that we want to set the standards, the environmental standards, for example in mining, we shouldn't have an attitude that we want to exclude it because human settlement is handling sanitation. I mean, we should be setting those national norms and standards. We should be holding human settlements to account that they're complying with it. So I want us to sit, look, I want part of that report also for me a much clearer view on the sanitation issue in that report. So that report now becoming not a report, it's becoming a whole book, as you can see. It's a big book that we're looking at. And you've got 3 months, so that is June, July, August. End of August, when we come back to Parliament here, that book should be like big on my table. All the other things you can do in the meantime, you can do in the meantime. Okay? Alright, so those are the tasks. Have I forgotten anything from the summary of what we want so far? Okay? Huh? No, the normal standard, they know all those things. They're going to send us all those documents, all the copies, all these drafts. Have we got them? Where did you? Have you got it? Now, well, my secretary is very possessive. She clings to those things. She holds tight. So at the moment, she's holding tightly onto the documents. The members of the committee have not seen or heard about these documents. They need to be packed. That's right. No, there is a reason. Okay, so we run then today. Then we come back on Friday. Let's start at 9. We start early. Quickly 4 inputs, then we finish. To all of you in the industry and that were here today, thank you very much. I actually tell you that I found your inputs very interesting and stimulating, all of them, even where we may have slightly thought that you maybe wasted a trip down here. But it's always nice to see and it's good to see the effort you put into it. And at least if I can see that those are your complaints, I then know that you're happy with the rest of the strategy, which is very important. I must tell you, you mustn't underestimate how important, not only your right to come and make submissions here, but we as a committee must tell you how important it is for us. Because we, as we sit here as MPs, we're supposed to be the experts on environment and so on. Like myself, I've never been involved. I've come here a year ago and I'm learning every day about things I've never heard of in my life. So when you come and make submissions here, you're actually also busy with an education process and you're doing the research that we don't have the capacity to do. I don't have the capacity to go and read on waste and the industries and so on. We're given one staff member here who we share, I don't know how many committees you're for the whole parliament, aren't you? Yeah. So, you know, he's not really a researcher, he's just a pretty face that sits here. And of course he works for the rest of parliament. Over and above that, he's good. So submissions is not only your right, but it's very vital for MPs, if they use them correctly, to be able to learn about the industry, to know and understand what is going on. So I want to thank you publicly for making submissions and taking the effort to come here and be part of it, because it helps us tremendously to understand to what extent the government department is on track with what they're busy doing. So, really, our appreciation for your efforts and your hard work. You're not only fulfilling your rights, but you're doing a good duty towards the public. Thank you very much. All right, Friday, 9. Anything else that anyone wants to raise? The two of you that are looking at China, Feel free to come and talk to me at some stage. Feel free to come with proposals. Okay, thank you. Meeting adjourned. Baba.
Of course, tomorrow. I made that mistake. I need it.
How is it?
Just 20, just 5. So you need it today?
No, I'll leave tomorrow. I'll leave tomorrow.
Change the time. Leave after hear what we have to do. Before we come to the presentation. I'm sending you all the presentation.
Good.
Okay.
I did
have a
question. Yeah, because tomorrow is Friday is going to be quick. That's what they say.
I raised all my problems and I explained to him
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you.
You have something to eat, Simon? No. You have something to eat?
Yeah. Where's the cap here?
Can you check it for me there? Stop for me. To other issues and see how they do things.
No problem. One thing that.
Yeah, let me get something.
Thank you.